knowledge fight. Dan and Jordan, I am sweating. KnowledgeFight.com. It's time to pray.
I have great respect for Knowledge Fight.
Knowledge Fight. I'm sick of them posing as if they're the good guys, saying we are the bad guys. Knowledge Fight.
Dan and Jordan.
Knowledge Fight.
I need money. Andy in Kansas. Andy in Kansas. Stop it. Andy in Kansas. Andy. It's time to pray. Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a Christian caller. I'm a huge fan.
I love your work.
Knowledge Fight.
KnowledgeFight.com. I love you.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Knowledge Fight. I'm Dan.
I'm Jordan.
We're a couple dudes like to sit around, drink novelty beverages, and talk a little bit about Alex Jones.
Indeed we are, Dan.
Jordan.
Dan?
Jordan.
Quick question.
What up?
Have you ever taken a martial arts class?
Yeah, maybe a little bit, but only for a very short period of time.
What was it?
I think it was judo.
Judo?
Like, my brother took judo when we were much younger, and I think I tried to get in on the act a little bit, but I didn't. It wasn't for me.
It wasn't for you?
No, not
Was
much.
There any martial art that you were attracted to? Like, did you even watch like kung fu movies or anything like that? Are you a Bruce Lee guy?
Not really.
Really?
Like, one of the things in my household growing up was like my parents were pretty like controlling about media that we watched.
Right, of course.
You know, there was very like things that were at all violent were kind of frowned upon and not really allowed in the house. So I don't know if it was like a hard and fast rule against martial arts movies, but like they definitely weren't something that was like something in my dad's interest.
Right.
That would have allowed it to get past the like restrictions of like, no, you're watching PBS and that's it. Right.
Your dad's not an Enter the Dragon guy.
No,
I gotcha.
No. Yeah, like maybe a Monty Python movie or something. We could watch like Mystery Science Theater and stuff like that, you know.
Sure.
So maybe some kung fu stuff that was made fun
that
of
was made fun of
on
okay.
the Satellite of Love.
All but, right.
Other than that, no, I don't know. It was never a big part of my growing up martial arts.
Have you ever had any interest in one particularly? Like, if you
I'm
had to
old.
Choose one now, can you even think? List like three martial arts.
Karate.
Nice.
Judo. Taekwondo.
Done.
All right. Aikido, isn't that
Aikido?
One?
Aikido? Yes, that is one.
Great.
That's your Steven Seagal right there.
That's Aikido. Probably where I pulled the name from.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It's not, I have nothing but respect for people who are, you know, drawn to the martial arts. I understand the discipline involved is very, you know, high level.
Yeah.
But it's not for me. My body does not, you know, like another thing too is like, you got to get hit. I'm not into that.
You don't have to get it.
You got to fall. Like, there's people, you know, martial arts, you're throwing people. In practice, you've got to be the one who gets thrown sometimes.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, early on, they teach you how to fall correctly.
Well, that's what they said about skateboarding, too. Learned how to fall off that board.
Fair enough.
Anyway, this is a podcast where I don't know much about martial arts, but I do know a lot about Alex Jones.
And I know quite a bit about the former and nothing about the latter.
All right. So, Jordan, today, you know how when you drink booze, you get hungover? You know how that's a thing that happens?
I take it Alex is real hungover.
No, I am experiencing what I could describe as an Alex Jones hangover from that Roger deposition on Friday.
Right.
That was like just the sweetest of the divine juice.
Sure. And just, then coming back to Alex Jones is the hangover part.
It's like, oh, God.
I spent one night having so much fun and now I'm miserable for the rest of the week.
Yeah. So getting ready for this episode was definitely like, why can't it always be like talking about Roger's deposition? So it's kind of it was a tough transition, but
we need to switch to a deposition only podcast.
God, if there
we could just go through a bunch of depositions.
If it were possible, like if there were enough source material of InfoWars people being deposed
all day,
100%,
nonstop.
Yes,
we need to branch out.
Well, because what makes it so fascinating is like they have to be there.
Yeah,
they're forced to answer questions, and that's a really interesting dynamic. What I thought we would do today is we are going to go over, I actually intended to do a bunch of days, it's just not possible. We're going over February 20th, 2020. I'm Dan, this is 2020. And the reason for that is that that's the day that Roger got sentenced.
Right.
So it seems like it would be a good idea to see how Alex took the news,
of course.
What was going on his show on that day. I should say that I also prepared February 16th, which was Sunday's show, but we're not going to go over that. But I think that it bears mentioning something, and that is that Max Kaiser, the guy of Max Coin fame, He was on, and Alex endorsed Bitcoin.
Ooh.
Like, it's not to the extent that, like, I don't know, some of these real serious, like a Max Keiser. He's serious proponent of Bitcoin. Yeah, yeah. Alex was having a conversation with him about it being gold 2.0 and
there
stuff.
We go. Yeah,
it was a much more full-throated announcement than I've ever heard him give. He's always been very skeptical and suspicious of Bitcoin. Of and it was
we can't hold it in your hand.
Yeah. I wanted to cover that or at least mention it because if you'd see some signs in the future of things related to that, it's good to know, like, oh, Max Keiser was on the show and they talked about how great Bitcoin is. Everybody's got to get it.
Somehow Alex is going to start his own Bitcoin exchange or something like
good.
That.
Good. My Alex coin.
Yeah. Ooh, not good.
So we're going to get into the 20th here. It's a rangy episode. There's a lot of real serious bullshit going on. But before we do, we got to take a moment to say thank you to some folks who have signed up with the shoe and are supporting things. So first, Joseph, thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thanks, Joseph.
Next, Anthony. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you, Anthony.
Thank you, Anthony. Next, Tama. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much, Tama.
Thank you. Next, Tony. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you, Tony.
Next, Tim. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thanks, Tim.
Thank you, Tim. Next, Citrus Flavor with 3 R's. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much, Citrus Flavor.
Thank you so much. Next, Mark. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thanks, Mark.
3 R's. And then finally, I'd like to say thank you to somebody who donated on an elevated level. We appreciate that very much. So, JP McMangler, thank you so much. You are now a technocrat.
I'm a policy wonk.
Crikey, mate, that's fantastic. Have yourself a brew.
How's your 401k doing, bro?
We got to go full tilt boogie on this, Watson, all right? Let's just get down to business. We ain't making that money off that heroin. Why you pimp so good? My neck is freakishly large. I declare info war on you.
Thank you so much, JP McMangler.
Yes, thank you very much, JP.
If you're out there listening and thinking, hey, I enjoy the show, I'd like to support these gents, do you can do that by going to our website, knowledgefight.com, clicking the button that says support the show. We would appreciate it.
It'd be very helpful.
So we start off the show on February 20th, and of course we have advanced knowledge of this early because we're looking at it from the future.
Right. We know the Nazis have invaded France, yes.
So we know that Roger Stone has gotten 40 months. The sentence was 40 months.
Yeah.
Alex starts the show off with a prediction. He thinks the judge is going to throw the book at him.
Okay.
Swamp creature, Amy Berman Jackson, the Obamaoid. Hemorrhoid in black robes. Was always going to throw the book at Roger Stone because that's what she does as a political show trial commissar. A political creature of tyranny.
Don't turn around.
Par excellence. Well, she just came out about 30 minutes ago before they went to recess and signaled she's going to throw the book at Stone. 7, 9, or 11 years.
Dead commissars in town.
Alex's prediction's a little bit off.
He was a little bit off, yeah.
Yeah. So you should just go, you know, hey, look. Not for nothing. Alex's instincts on a macro scale are bad.
Yes.
And on a micro scale, yes, they are also bad.
Yeah,
he is just really bad at just about all of this stuff.
Everything.
His sense of things, his instincts. So most of the beginning of this show, I would say a large portion of the beginning of this show is Owen Schroyer is there at the courthouse waiting for the verdict.
Great.
And Alex and him, they try and do a little bit of an interview where Alex is, you know, talking to Owen.
What's it like on the ground?
But Owen starts getting heckled by people, and it completely deteriorates.
Love it.
It's one of the more surreal things I've heard, and one of the more transparently publicity stunty things I've seen Alex do in my time covering him. But we have a little bit of a section here where they're actually having a conversation, and Owen is out of line.
She has signaled that she's about to come back from recess and throw the book at him. I predict she gives him 7 years. She said, it could be 11 to make it sound like she's lenient and gracious for giving him 7 years, I'm predicting, in the next hour. Owen Schroyer.
Well, Alex, you know, it's incredible, too, because this is an obvious mistrial just based on the technicalities alone.
Sure.
The jury was obviously corrupt. The jurors committed crimes. When they lied on the jury questionnaire about running for office and about posting publicly about this case. So
So Owen is talking about the jury forewoman, Tamika Hart,
yes,
who's become a bit of a target for right-wing media and their desperate attempts to come up with a reason for why Roger was found guilty and is going to prison.
It was because he committed the crimes.
Well, that's what globalists say.
Oh, damn it. So always.
On a recent episode, we talked about how Mike Cernovich was pushing this theory that she had not disclosed that she'd run for office as a Democrat during the jury selection process. But as far as I can tell, this has not been proven in any way. All of the proof Cernovich offers is the fact that she had run for office and that one of the questions potential jurors are asked is if they've ever run for office. This is not an indication that she lied in response to the question. There's no proof that answering yes would be disqualifying. There's nothing here. All this amounts to is an argument that jurors are asked this question. She had run for office. She was on the jury. Therefore, she must have lied about running for office. The logic is full of holes, and without any proof, this is just people talking shit. Miss Hart has been the target of such vitriol that a fellow juror named Seth Cousins came out and spoke with USA Today about how shitty this all is. He said, quote, "The irony here is that Tamika Hart was perhaps the strongest advocate in the room for a rigorous process, for the rights of the defendant, and for making sure that we took it seriously and looked at each charge." Cousins went on to say, quote, "Without her in the room, we would have returned the same verdict, and we would have returned it more quickly and without looking as deeply into the evidence. I'm firmly convinced of that." Owen and the right-wing media's theory that Miss Hart lied when being questioned is based on nothing other than their supposition. You even heard that being echoed by Norm Pattis when he was on Alex's show last week. He hadn't even read the transcripts, but was saying if she'd not disclosed it, it would be a cause for concern.
Yes.
Well, guess what? She didn't lie about it. There was an article in The Hill published on February 15th, which includes this line, quote, "The brief examination of the voir dire hearing shows that Hart did disclose her ties to the Democratic Party. U.S. District Judge Amy Berman Jackson asked if Hart's political history would prevent her from being fair, and Hart assured her it would not." Most of the non-shithead right-wing propaganda sources I can find are really clear that Hart's background was brought up in her voir dire. Her potential bias was established by that history, and Roger's lawyers had every opportunity to question her and to eliminate her from the jury pool if they wanted to, which they didn't do. This is just sad shit. These people are so desperate to defend Roger that this is the level of defense they can come up with, speculating wildly about a juror lying in a response to a question that it turns out she answered honestly. Also, not for nothing, what Owen is doing is directly accusing Hart of a crime, with no evidence to support the accusations. This is dangerous territory for a guy working at a place that is drowning in defamation claims.
Hey, come on. What's one more? It's just another drop in the bucket.
You would have thought that his time working with Roger on the War Room would have trained him to be a little slicker.
Nope.
But turns out...
Can't copy that.
Yeah, turns out not the case.
It's such, like, this is just, like, the baseline of any Democrat on any jury is impossible.
That's exactly
You're
right.
not allowed... If you're a Democrat, you're not allowed to judge anyone ever because you're evil automatically.
That's the functioning legal theory that's animating this rhetoric. It is.
Democrats aren't people.
Non-Trump lovers can't judge Trump lovers.
Exactly.
There is a supposition of inability to see past political belief or whatever.
Right.
And
which
that's
only,
dangerous. I mean,
which only reveals that they are unable to see past that kind of situation.
Or unwilling.
That's possible.
But like that's a dangerous road to go down. Yeah. I mean, what you're asking for is essentially ending up with like a split judicial system for people with different political beliefs. And I think that
it's not that far off from what we have now.
Well,
it would just not be based on race.
It would be
and class.
It would be fine.
Yeah.
So Alex wants to defend Roger, and like, look, it's tough. It's tough because there's a lot of evidence that he did the things he's accused of. And some of those things are sending really threatening messages to Randy Cretico when Cretico said that he wasn't going to plead the fifth and he was going to talk to Mueller's investigators. And, you know, hey, when you make threats towards someone who's going to go testify, it kind of tends to lend the idea that you're trying to threaten them into not testifying.
No, that's just how he signs off on all his texts. He's just like, hey, Ma, it's great to talk to you. Next time I see you, I'm going to murder your dog. Anyways, let's have a great
time. It's interesting you bring up the dog thing because Alex, he actually has an explanation for that.
Oh, no.
that we're not considering.
Okay.
Jackson says it's nice that Cretico has forgiven Stone and that he didn't believe that Stone would really kill him or his dog. That says more about Cretico than it does Stone, the judge says. By the way, Stone was saying, I'll take that dog away from you. You're not feeding it enough. According to Stone, Credico was having problems, not attacking Credico.
Okay. All right, Alex. All right.
Get the fuck out of here. Yeah. Really?
The surrounding context of Roger's threat to take that dog away from you seems to not support Alex's claim that it was set out of Roger's good-hearted concern for the dog's diet. The texts say, you're a rat, you're a stoolie, you backstab your friends. Or what about the time just after threatening to take his dog away, he said, quote, I'm so ready, let's get it on, prepare to die, cocksucker.
All right, okay.
That tends to give some context to the, I'm going to take your dog away from you.
Let's recontextualize it. Rat, you're a rat, that's what you've been feeding your dog.
Stoolie.
Right.
You trained your dog to sit on a stool.
What is not feeding your dog correctly but stabbing your dog in the back?
This all makes perfect sense to me. I could respect Alex saying that Roger talked shit to Credico, but that it shouldn't matter. It's just locker room talk or something.
Yeah.
At least that would be an attempt to spin this within the realm of reality. But this weak shit, man, Alex really expects people to believe that Roger was concerned that Randy wasn't feeding his dog enough, and so he's going to take the dog for its own good. That's sad.
Alex
should be ashamed of himself trying to pitch something like that.
That's not good.
Yeah. You dick.
Yeah.
So Alex is talking about Randy Credico and this situation, and he says a few things that I find particularly unsettling.
I have been talking to Credico, but that's off record.
Why have you been talking to Randy Credico?
I assume to interfere with another trial.
I don't know if it... I mean, it's certainly not appropriate, the idea that a witness in Roger's trial would be having back-channel communications with Alex. I'm not actually sure if that is happening, but if it is, I just wanted to put this in the episode that Alex is claiming. That.
Just in case
it's illegal, it's now on the record. Alex has claimed that he's been in contact with a witness in Stone's trial.
I mean, they've been texting him. Alex has been sending him dog food just of a higher quality. I think Alex is a great guy in this circumstance.
So Alex says that he's been in contact with Credico, and I'm like, that's not great.
No.
But then he says something else that's like, oh boy, this could get weird.
He got crosswise with Stone, bantering back and forth with Tough Guy Talk, and he now just thinks it's terrible what's happening to Stone. The judge says she doesn't care. And so look for him to be on the show today.
What?
I expect the judge to throw Roger directly into jail today.
Another bad prediction. And Randy Credico, Alex is saying he's going to be on the show today.
He is not going to be on the show.
Alex teases also throughout the rest of the show, we have a special guest coming up. He frequently, while having Owen Schroyer co-hosting with him remotely, is like, I got to go call Randy Credico. Like he's making calls and like disappearing while Owen is on remote. It's like, oh man, I wonder if Randy Credico is going to show up on this episode.
So Alex is more just harassing Randy to
show up
on it. Possible.
I don't know.
Based on what we're describing here.
He also might just actually not be talking to him, but like talking to Roger's friends or something.
Sure.
Could be. Tyler Nixon, one of Roger's personal attorneys, does show up
on
this episode. And it's the lamest shit. It's just like, Roger's great.
Who cares? Who among us hasn't fucked a rat?
Mm-hmm. So, you know, you get this weirdness on InfoWars sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just hear things and you're like, I don't know what the fuck is going on.
Like when Schroyer talks.
Sure. So Alex is talking about how Trump is going to pardon Roger, and that's great.
Yeah.
Sure. In discussion of that, he talks about other pardons, and you might be confused when you hear this.
He pardoned or gave clemency, cut the sentence down, Blagojevich, and Blagojevich was out in 1 hour and back on an airplane flying home to Chicago. That's the power of the executive of we the people. We elected the president. He wields our veto power over the witch judges, over the out of control systems.
So you might think it's weird to hear Alex be pretty okay with Trump pardoning notoriously corrupt former governor of Illinois, Rod Blagojevich.
Dan, he was a political prisoner.
You'd be right to think that was weird. It is very weird. On the surface, it seems like the thing Alex would be very opposed to. Blago was a Democrat in the most corruptly Democratic state in the country, part of the same machine that he thinks brought Barack Obama into the world. Like, this is not somebody who Alex would be pulling for. But you always have to remember that InfoWars is weird. Sometimes they have positions you wouldn't expect. And that is the case with Rod Blagojevich.
I would almost guarantee that if we went back to any time where Blagojevich was governor, at some point Alex would have talked endless amounts of shit about how he should be in jail.
Well, possibly, but not after he got arrested. Because according to InfoWars lore, Blagojevich wasn't arrested because he was trying to profit off the filling of Obama's former Senate seat, among other flagrantly corrupt actions. He was taken down because he dared stand up to the Bank of America, which is, of course, part of the Federal Reserve System, and if you fuck with the Fed, you end up like Blago. This narrative is based on the fact that on December 8th, 2008, Blagojevich restricted government agencies from working with Bank of America until they restored credit to the Republic Windows and Doors, a factory in Illinois that had been put into bankruptcy and whose employees were staging a sit-in. The next day, on December 9th, Blagojevich was arrested on his corruption charges. These things happened close to each other in time. Therefore, a causal relationship has been established, and therefore we know that Blagojevich was a good guy who was just trying to fight the Fed and got screwed.
As always, on InfoWars, correlation not only equals causation, it doesn't even matter anyways. They're going to say whatever they want.
Right. The InfoWars narrative makes it sound like Blagojevich was trying to permanently sever relations between the state of Illinois and Bank of America, which is absolutely not the case. An article on InfoWars says that he made a, quote, declaration that Illinois would no longer deal with Bank of America. But that's just silly. It was a negotiation tactic he was using to try and save a factory where employees were protesting. Articles from the time are really clear about this, like this one from December 8th in the State Journal Register. Quote, Governor Rod Blagojevich has ordered all state agencies to stop doing business with Bank of America to pressure the company to help workers who are staging a sit-in at a shuttered Chicago plant. Blagojevich says banks got bailout money and should provide lines of credit to businesses that need it so workers can keep working. The employees were staging a sit-in because they were informed that they were going out of business with no notice and they didn't receive pay or any benefits. Ultimately, Bank of America announced a settlement on December 10th, where they would create a fund of $1.75 million to take care of the workers who were owed back pay, severance, vacation time, and whatnot. This achievement was possibly helped by Blagojevich's action, but it was, in any way, it was not infected at all by his arrest.
Yeah.
The real win was because the workers stood their ground and because of the support of the Union Electrical, Radio, and Machine Workers of America Union. Anyway, InfoWars is super anti-union, so they don't tend to get into the details of the actual story.
Ooh, they don't want to do that.
No. They prefer just to pretend that Blago exiled Bank of America from Illinois and then was arrested the next day because he was a threat to the Federal Reserve. This is how children tell stories, and that's the level of shit that we're dealing with. But it helps explain why Alex is really okay with Trump pardoning Blagojevich.
Yeah, of course.
Which seems like something that would not make sense.
No,
it's
makes
because
no sense.
Deep InfoWars lore involving Blagojevich and Bank of America.
That's insane to me.
Yeah.
That is just...
I didn't even realize that until I looked into it.
Why? What? Why? Huh? I just don't understand. I don't understand. Also, I think it would be very funny if we woke up, because there's a Bank of America near where we live.
There's
if
Bank
we just
of America everywhere.
Everywhere. Just like walk down the street and it's shuttered with giant Blago stopped us signs.
But
like,
that'd
be great.
It's less about like kicking the Bank of America out. It's more like you can't state agencies can't do business with it.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
The chains would still be open, you know, like the the ATMs. But anyway, it was all just a negotiation tactic to help workers that were hurt by the downturn in the economy, bailouts, and what have you.
I hate InfoWars.
Yeah, I know. It's very simplistic stuff.
I don't like them.
No, they're not great. So, anyway, Alex is cool with Blago.
Sure.
Another reason Chicago hates Alex Jones.
Yeah.
So Owen's out there at the courthouse, and up to this point, it's been going okay. Alex and him have been talking about how Roger got screwed and Trump's going to pardon him.
Right, right.
And then the inevitable happens and other people get involved.
That's dangerous.
They're trying to harass me right now. Again, they're celebrating.
Hey, let's talk to him. Let's go talk to him because I know somebody screamed at Roger that he was a traitor, that he's a Russian.
Because he was convicted by 12 people for committing the crime.
So why are you pushing? He didn't touch them.
What?
We had to cut the audio off. They assaulted him. It's all on video.
Ugh.
And then they said that he attacked them.
They did have to cut because the guy said the F word.
Said fuck. Yeah. Fuck you.
But I don't know. I went and I watched the video, and I don't see what happened there. Like, I don't know if Owen was pushing this guy or the cameraman possibly pushed this guy. But the guy who says, you know, don't fucking push me.
Yeah.
That's what he says. I don't know. The video doesn't show that he wasn't pushed.
Right.
I don't know what to make of this, but it seems like, hey, you know, maybe somebody bumped into somebody and everybody's getting mad at each other.
Emotions are running high because InfoWars is there and everybody is furious.
Yeah. So we get to this turning into a publicity stunt.
Of course.
Out and out now. And Alex is just telling Owen what to do. He's like...
He's a puppet master?
Yes, okay. 100%. Okay.
America's back. You better get used to it.
Keep going, Owen.
Yeah, you want to see an innocent man go to jail. You celebrate like a Nazi. You come out here like a Nazi and celebrate an innocent man going to jail. An innocent man.
Ignore the rat people. Ignore the rat guy and go back to the media.
Don't stop.
Go back to the corrupt corporate media. Look at those. Look at those stooges waiting for their orders.
See, there's a real fun irony.
Not done yet. Keep going. Oh, don't stop.
There's a real delicious irony in Alex telling Owen to go yell at the media who are waiting on orders when he's giving Owen orders.
Yeah. See, they're waiting for orders. I'm giving you orders. We've got the initiative.
On its face, it's a little
like World War II.
Yeah. So this goes on quite a while.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, shame on you. Tell them for me. Shame on you, MSM.
Let's be lost.
Shame on you, MSM, covering up the Clinton pedophile rings.
Sure.
What a shame. You come out here and demonize InfoWars, but all the mainstream news covered up pedophile rings. All the mainstream news covered up Jeffrey Epstein.
Look at you.
You all part in it. All of you.
You're all complicit.
And make fun of me, but I'm out here standing for truth.
Tell them InfoWars.com lives.
Okay. All right, Alex.
This is so weird.
It is.
It is. It's like... You know when somebody's got the earpiece in and you clearly know that they're getting instructions in you, but you don't hear what's in the earpiece.
Right.
You know, this is both happening at the same time, and you're like, is this a joke? What's happening right now?
Yeah.
Am I psychic?
It's the sort of thing that maybe what InfoWars should do from a presentation aspect is just go to the video of Owen.
That would make sense.
You know, it seems like showing both parts looks sad.
Yeah.
It looks a little bit. Because Alex is like too overeager to be out there himself. And he's clearly like bummed out that Owen isn't doing this exactly right. Like you can hear him be like, InfoWars.com lives. Yeah. Get a plug in.
Yeah. People Epstein isn't dead or whatever it is.
People are looking at you. Get a fucking plug in. And it gets so fucking obvious that that's what Alex is really trying to direct Owen to do.
Owen Schroyer, listen, you got a lot of cameras on you. Listen to me. I'm going to go to break for 3 minutes. Owen, you just keep going because you're on a bunch of the streams right now out there. You keep going for 4 minutes, 3 minutes. We'll come back from break. I'm going to go right to Owen Schroyer, but keep letting him have it, Owen.
It's too obvious when he's telling him, like, you got a bunch of cameras on you right now. Yeah. Look, Fox News is covering you out there. Look, get InfoWars' name out there. Look, dude, we're going to go to commercial, but you got to keep going.
Yeah.
Owen, you're doing great. You're doing great. You're getting the name out there. Free press. Owen, seriously. It's ridiculous.
It does have a feel of like the dad being like, okay, no, you got to harness your anger, though. I've been angry the whole time, but you can't let it get a hold of you. You got to make sure you're promoting while you're angry. Get rid of the anger. It's fake. We're not trying to be angry.
That is a slight piece of it, too. Alex is trying to explain to Owen, like, look, people are going to yell at you.
Yes.
Ignore them.
Don't worry.
Ignore them.
Yeah.
Cameras.
Focus.
Cameras.
Eyes on the prize.
Yes. So they go to break and they come back and it turns out that Owen, he left that area and found another press gaggle.
Can't.
You get in there and let him have it. Owen Schroyer live at the swamp entering another press gaggle for radio listeners. Live feeds, Bandod Video. Owen, you're in charge.
Trying to figure out where to go here.
Just march right in front of those cameras.
You march in front of those cameras. The cameras are what's important. This is sad.
God, have like levers and pulleys that makes Owen's arm go up and down.
This is the way that monsters respond to things like this. Like, he doesn't give a fuck. No. Like, I mean, obviously he wants Roger pardoned, but bigger situation is like, there's a lot of media on this.
Yeah.
This is a prime opportunity for InfoWars. Yeah.
It feels like if this was Roger's funeral, he would be like, oh, no, it's terrible, Roger. But what Roger would have wanted is for you to scream InfoWars at all the cameras.
Yes, for
that's
sure.
That's what he would really have wanted you to do.
Yes, he was a soldier.
Yeah, the honor his memory.
Mm-hmm. So during the first hour of the show, the verdict comes in and Alex goes directly to Fox News coverage of the verdict.
Let's go ahead and actually cut to the Fox News live feed that Owen was just live on a moment ago. Let's cut to Fox News.
Talking with his attorneys today. So what was the actual reaction when we found out it was 3 years and 4 months and not anywhere near the 7 to 9 years that originally had been prosecutor's recommendation?
Well, his defense team breathed a sigh of relief. Stone did not make much emotion from what I'm reading here. And, you know, it's also customary for the defendant usually to speak before the judge just before they're sentenced. He was given that opportunity today, but he declined. He said that he had nothing further to add. Roger Stone is not someone that shies away from comments or the camera, as we know. So it remains to be seen, though, if he'll say something when he leaves here. I suspect he'll probably still be under that gag order because this is still an ongoing case. The judge still has jurisdiction.
Yeah, don't you love it? Everybody else can talk, but the innocent person now given 3+ years.
So you have a situation where Alex started the show with his prediction that he's going to get 7, 9, 11 years and they're going to take him away in handcuffs. They're going to throw the book at him. All of this has not come true. He got a little over 3 years. He's probably not going to serve even if he doesn't get a pardon.
Yeah.
He'll still only be in for like a year or whatever. So that failed. His, like, the globalist swamp who wants to destroy this man, that failed. He's going to be taken away in handcuffs. No, he wasn't.
Yeah.
He's at home preparing to go to prison as we speak. So that prediction failed. So now what do you complain about? Gag order.
Great.
You just, there's always something. No matter what, whatever prediction fails to materialize, there will be some way you can take the narrative.
Yeah.
And that's all that's going on here.
I have a question.
Great. I love questions.
Alex can't possibly think he's innocent of the charges, right? So he has to think that what Roger did wasn't illegal, or if it was, it shouldn't be, right?
I don't know. I think at that point when you're asking that, you're asking me to assume what's in Alex's head.
That's fair.
I don't believe that he can think that Roger didn't do the things that have been demonstrated that he did.
It can't be possible,
that
right?
That seems difficult for me.
Even Roger wouldn't tell him that he didn't do it.
But then trying to assume like whether he thinks that like he did those things and they shouldn't be illegal or they are illegal, but it's cool because he did it for a good reason.
Right.
No idea.
Nah.
Those sorts of things. It seems difficult to believe like he didn't send those messages.
Yeah.
He didn't lie to investigators.
Of course he did.
Right. And that's why all of the defenses end up being like, well, this juror lied.
Yeah.
Why isn't Andrew McCabe in prison? Like,
yeah, no one's disputing that he did this shit.
Roger.
Yeah.
So Alex has now sent Owen out there to yell at these cameras. And in that clip you heard, he's throwing it to Fox News and he brings up Owen was just on the Fox News feeds.
Oh, no.
So there is an increased traffic to Alex's website.
Right.
And of course, just naturally, as we've seen, whenever these things happen that are relevant to InfoWars world, like Roger being sentenced to prison, people tune in to InfoWars.
Yeah.
He sees a big spike in traffic and he behaves exactly like you'd expect.
Ladies and gentlemen. We have the immune gargles, the 16 ounce in the 3.4 and the 1 ounce. That is going to be selling out very, very soon. That is available. It has the nano patented silver that's documented to take out the corona family viruses as well. Also, fish oil has vitamin D3 in it. We have one of the highest quality.
Gives it a burpees.
With our ultimate fish oil, that's at InfoWarsStore.com.
It goes on. He just does a really long.
Huge pill.
Big ass horse pill. He does just a really long plug for stuff.
Yeah.
And I think it's in the middle of the hour, too. Like, it seems like very much like, okay, we've got eyes. We got eyes on this. Get a long plug in. So he does that, goes out to break.
Yeah.
And when he comes back, it's back to yelling at Owen. About
telling him what to do.
Yep.
This is a threat to America.
Yeah, don't respond to the mental patients. Just put your information out.
Russian collusion. Listen to the cult. Don't respond to the cult.
Overdrive them with the truth. Expose the Democrats hate America.
The cult.
You're doing a bad job.
Hey, no. This sounds so much like the next thing he's going to say is, all right, fine. Stop it. I will be there in an hour.
I'm getting in the teleporter.
Yeah,
wait,
exactly.
Uh-oh.
Trump gave it to me. Shit. Better get rid of my med bed real quick.
So this just goes on. He's just really mad that Owen won't, like, self-promote while he's out there.
Jesus.
Look at these pathetic Democrats that have come out here for their consolation prize, a kangaroo trial that totally exposes them. Oh, and they're destroying themselves. Everyone knows they hate America. Talk about being his co-host. The cameras are on you. Tell him how he's been gagged, but you haven't.
Tell him that he's been gagged, but you haven't. They can still look at your, they can still watch your show. He used to be your co-host. Get
absolutely
a plug in. Fucking plug.
If you want to support Roger, you better continue watching The War Room.
Exactly. That was his show. That's what he would want you to do.
Yeah, that's what he would want you to do.
So it's just so fucking clear that Owen's job is to get eyes on the product.
Yeah.
Promote.
Owen's got his earpiece back in. Owen, we're live on air, doing a great job. Just ignore the cult members.
No, he's not.
And just put out your message for all the cameras that are there. Talk about being his co-host, what it's like, you know, how this, I mean, just whatever you want to say, but you're there. I wouldn't respond to the mental patients. And it looks like they escaped from a mental institution. They're all weird old white people that look like they escaped from a mental institution. Sure. Like they've all been locked in a cellar with methamphetamine for 40 years.
Sounds fun.
Yes, Alex, clearly exhibiting cult behavior out here. I've never seen a better exhibition of cult behavior just chanting lies at me. See, that's all they can do is chant lies.
So what?
What if I've said nothing that's a lie.
But they get you to respond to them. The cameras are all on you. Tell folks what happened to Roger.
What have I said that's a lie? What have I said that's a lie? Anybody?
Man. He gets baited, and I'm not mad at Owen. This is real TV and radio. He wants to try to humanize them and talk to them. They don't talk to you. So you're in front of all the news cameras. Speak for Roger. He's been silenced. He's your co-host. Tell the people there. It's like I'm a ghost trying to talk to the living. It's supposed to be like. I'm like a ghost trying to influence someone. Like, you know, your child is using fentanyl. I'm a ghost. I saw it. Go take it away. It's under their bed, and they don't hear me. Owen, speak to the news cameras about what happened to Roger. Ignore the crypt keepers.
That's a very weird thing to warn your kid about.
Yeah.
Got fentanyl under its bed.
Especially if it's a ghost.
I don't know. I'm going to leave that aside. So the primary issue here is that, like, the InfoWars correspondents who go out on the field have a brand.
Yeah.
They have a specific thing that they're supposed to do. And Owen is working across purposes. He doesn't realize, because I think he thinks that he's like a legitimate, maybe he thinks he's good at what he does. I don't know.
I don't know.
For whatever reason, he sees like engaging with people who are telling him he's lying about stuff is a good play.
Yeah, and it's not. No.
His brand is as like the guy, like when he went and yelled at Jerry Nadler and got taken out and they got to pretend he was going to be in prison forever for yelling at the impeachment stuff. That's his brand.
Yep.
He's a strong young man. He is not the person who maybe looks incapable of arguing with a crowd of people. That's weakness.
Yep.
That is not good for Owen Schroyer. Owen Schroyer's brand is the cuck destroyer.
Exactly.
They can't do that in a live feed.
No.
They need those videos to be produced where he does actually run into somebody that he destroys. And then you can package that and send it out. Great. It works for the brand.
Right.
That's where Owen can get talk to random strangers.
Right.
In this case, you just need him to be defiant, a voice yelling truth to the cameras.
Yeah.
Cameras, very important cameras.
Yeah.
Your brand is the defiant guy yelling at these cameras. Mm-hmm. And when you try and get out of your lane a little bit, it doesn't work for branding. It doesn't work for marketing. Stay in your fucking lane. Yell at the cameras. Alex keeps telling that to him, and Owen keeps getting distracted by people who are just like, you suck.
Why is he an idiot?
Doesn't even have his earpiece. So we're going to cut away from this. But it's okay. It's just how it always works. You never engage the crypt keepers. So that's that. No more coverage from Owen Schroyer. Cut down by the crypt keepers. So they say something to him. He's got to respond to them. And then that's the end of it. So do your own live feeds, Owen. You're doing a great job. But you're out there in front of all the news cameras responding to crypt keepers. And when you go over and try to talk to them, they go, F you, we're not talking to you. You know the response. So I don't know why we're even there. You're in front of all the cameras. Talk about Roger, your co-host.
It's just so obvious.
Man.
When you have, like, it's what you're saying. Like, when you have both sides of the earpiece, it's like, it's so overt, like, what you're trying to do. This is a stunt. This is publicity. Stop engaging. Do your job.
Yeah.
It's very sad. But Owen does manage to find one Roger supporter in the crowd.
But here, who's this fellow right here with the Roger Stone giant banner? Pardon Roger Stone. Let's talk to him.
Enrique Tarrio here just brought out the sign. What's up?
What's up, guys? What's up, InfoWars? We're here.
So that's not a random Roger supporter who Owen found out there on the streets. That's Enrique Tarrio, who's the chairman of the Proud Boys.
Oh, that's not good.
No. So in case you're keeping score, Alex is accusing all the people there, like who are the people who are mad at Roger.
Yes.
See, they're all AstroTurf, and they're there for some nefarious, unspecified purpose. Owen manages to find one person there who supports Roger, and it happens to be the leader of a street gang that's associated with Roger, who happens to own the t-shirt shop that sold the Roger Stone Did Nothing Wrong shirt.
Sure.
Seems like there's a whole lot of conflicts Alex should be pointing out in relation to interviewing this person, as opposed to just presenting them as a random supporter of Roger's.
Hey, he's from the heartland, Dan.
Right.
He's the real Americans.
Whatever.
Yeah.
It's bullshit.
Yep.
So anyway, Alex decides like, hey, Owen, you found a guy who can talk. Go ahead, interview that guy. I'm going to take a break. So Owen talks to Enrique for a little bit.
The cavalry is there. I don't know how much the president is aware of it or not, but it's time for the cavalry to get into the battlefield.
Yes, it's time for us to
Calvary's get off a place. The couch.
We need to get off the couch. I'm a huge advocate, and I've said it on your show before. I'm a huge advocate.
Oh, you've been on a show before?
If you believe you want that change, right? Run for office.
Which you did.
I did. I'm running in Florida's 27th congressional.
All right, we're about to take a break.
So somehow the irony of this entire interview is lost on Owen. He's talking to the leader of a street gang about how the cavalry is out there and needs to get more active.
Cavalry.
I'm just using the words he used. It's legitimately nuts how these dudes insist on pretending that they're in any way journalists. When in reality, I mean, Owen is operating as more or less like a PR firm for crypto monarchists.
Yeah.
So Enrique Tarrio is running for a seat in the House, as he mentioned in that clip there. But there's literally no chance he's even going to make it through the primaries. However, he did answer survey questions about his candidacy for Ballotpedia, and I found some of it pretty illuminating.
All right.
For one, he has a list of people that he admires and he looks up to. And so you got like Martin Luther King Jr., Winston
Bullshit.
Churchill,
Get the fuck out.
Ron Paul.
Okay.
They're all on there.
Well, that one I buy.
But you know who else is on there? Jack Posobiec.
Look, I get, hey, maybe you like him. You do not admire him. Zero people admire Jack.
Martin Luther King, Winston Churchill, Jack Posobiec.
I think we know which ones he actually cares about.
Martin Luther King Jr., Winston Churchill, the guy who pretended Comet Ping Pong Pizza was scary.
Exactly.
Great. So he was asked what media someone might take in to understand his philosophy. And Tarrio's answer was, quote, The Death of the West by Pat Buchanan and Atlas Shrugged by Ayn Rand.
Oh.
So he's fun.
Great.
Yeah, good.
That's a guy I want to talk to at a party, Dan.
I think I got a good sense of your philosophy, and it's not good.
Shit.
So he was asked, quote, What do you perceive to be the U.S.'s greatest challenges as a nation over the next decade? His answer was, quote, Partisan division and the introduction of socialist policies in our government. As to the partisan division, he's the leader of a right-wing street gang, and he was physically present at the Unite the Right rally, so he can straight up fuck himself on that count. As for the socialist policies being a problem in the future, it makes me wonder if he's campaigning on getting rid of Social Security. I wonder if that whole like socialist policies thing is just a talking point and a fun word for him to say, or if he's in favor of doing away with one of the most successful and popular programs in this country's history. I'm guessing it's the talking point.
Yeah, I'm going to go with that one.
I also have a strong suspicion that Enrique Tarrio is running for office as a ploy to get back on Twitter and PayPal. Since if he were running for the House, he could make an argument that he's being banned from those programs and platforms. It's a form of election meddling. Tommy Robinson and Sargon of Akkad tried to make that argument when they ran with UKIP. And I believe Laura Loomers made similar attempts to get back on social media. Whatever the motivation, though, this dude has no chance, even in the GOP primary.
Yeah.
It's all very dumb.
What an
very
asshole.
Dumb. So anyway, they do this interview, and Alex comes back, and he's just so pissed that he's not there.
Oh, and just for me, tell him Alex Jones has a message to you. America is awake to your anti-American scum. Roger Stone is innocent and will be pardoned. You are losers. You have failed.
We have a message from Alex Jones.
Boo.
You have lost.
It's a real show of faith in your employees when you don't micromanage.
A bad one.
No, it's a lack of a show of faith when you do micromanage. When you have to guide all of their decisions. Here, say this for me. It just means you don't trust that they're able to do the job.
And not just that, but like, God, if you know you're going to get so many more viewers because of this stunt, then as important as it is to try and sell there, The other big, perhaps the biggest thing you should be doing is putting on a fucking show that people are going to watch tomorrow.
Right.
You know, like put on a show and people are like, oh, shit. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I want to continue watching this.
I think Alex kind of knows on some level that he's going to get whatever maintenance or like retained viewers he's going to get. It's more important to just do a smash and grab robbery as opposed to a confidence scam.
That's
like,
fair.
Just, people are going to see through it.
That's fair.
It's just. Just take the money and run.
Yeah, he's a bad con man. That's fair.
So he's done with Owen now, and we get to actually like the show, and we get to some headlines. Of course, we're going to end up getting into the coronavirus news, but he has some other stuff to talk about.
Now the ADL says that Senator Ted Cruz is anti-Semitic for criticizing Bloomberg. When it's the ADL constantly injecting Judaism into things and saying if you oppose anybody that's Jewish, that you're a Nazi.
Really?
Pretty amazing. That's coming up as well. Very, very sad to see the ADL trying to promote anti-Semitism because that is what they're doing, trying to make everything about if somebody's Jewish or not. I don't think people are making that an issue about Bloomberg, but he's a globalist.
Oh, I see. Right. Good stuff there. I don't think you're helping yourself at the end, but whatever. Alex is taking it real hard to Bloomberg, and it's really interesting because on the 16th, the Sunday episode that I listened to, a lot of that was anti-Bloomberg stuff. And I think Alex is maybe getting into the possibility that Bloomberg is going to be the candidate and really going hard at him.
Yeah.
What I find super fascinating is like the critiques that I see from the left are more real than Alex's. But Alex can't make those critiques
because
he's in favor of stop and frisk. He's
absolutely
in favor of redlining.
Loves it.
So all he could do is be like, I wants to run your life. Soda taxes.
Oh, no, not soda taxes. Right. Oh, no.
Which, I mean, there's a conversation to be had there, and that's all good and well. But, like, I think the actual harder criticisms are surrounding his history of racist policies,
right.
His personal racism, transphobia, homophobia. These things are far more salient points to make about him, but Alex can't.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to see him attacking Bloomberg, but, like, being far more impotent in it than the people who he thinks are globalists.
Yeah, it is. It must be a struggle because when you're looking at Bloomberg next to Trump, you're like his real decision is just like, well, Trump's a bigger asshole and he's louder.
Right.
That's different.
Right.
That's it.
That's the selling point.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, it's tough. That's the other thing, too, is like you can't make too many complaints about Bloomberg if you're Alex because you support some of the stuff that is bad about him.
Oh, he's and got then, a history of sexual harassment.
Well, see, that's the other thing. Yeah. A lot of the other complaints you could raise bring up points about Trump that you don't want to discuss.
Yeah.
So it's Alex is in a very weird pickle there about attacking Bloomberg, but whatever. Anyway, the ADL critiqued Ted Cruz for tweeting out a suggestion that Mike Bloomberg, quote, owns the media, which, of course, is a classical element of anti-Semitic rhetoric and conspiracy theory.
Right.
In this case, it's kind of a tightrope act that needs to be walked if you don't want to fall into that pit.
Yeah.
Because Mike Bloomberg obviously does own some media outlets.
Yeah, in a sense. In a sense. He does own a
part
media.
Of a media. Meets specifics.
Yeah.
I don't think that anyone would get too upset if you want to discuss how the fact that he does personally own actual outlets like Bloomberg, how that could have an actual effect on the coverage coming out of them. It's a really hard thing for me to believe that people who work at Bloomberg feel completely free to cover Mike Bloomberg from an unbiased perspective. That's an acceptable thing to voice concerns about. But what Ted Cruz was doing was suggesting that Bloomberg owned the media, not specific outlets. This plays into the narratives that have deeply anti-Semitic roots, and an organization like ADL exists in part to point these things out. Not to call Ted Cruz an anti-Semite, but to take advantage of a teachable moment where people could learn to express things better and not fall into these traps that have been used historically for nefarious purposes.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that, you just see backlash about it by people like Alex and wonder why.
I mean, that is such just like... If Ted Cruz had said Bloomberg owns a media outlet, that is a damning indictment. Like, you should not also own you shouldn't own anything if you're going to be a president. That's wrong.
And I don't know if he had more.
Wrong.
I don't know if he had more comments than just the tweet about it.
Yeah.
But I think that the tweet that Ted Cruz made probably was closer to pointing out the ownership of Bloomberg than it was to say he owns the entire media.
Yeah.
But the phrasing of it and the way it was expressed was not great.
Yeah.
And it's a sort of thing where it's like, no one's saying that you hate Jews. It's saying that this is not the way to express that. Anyway, now we get to some coronavirus stuff. This is dumb.
God, it's gotten to the point where I wish they would solve the coronavirus issue just for me. Just so I don't have to hear Alex talk about it.
I'm sure you speak for our audience. So anyway, there's breaking news. There's a cruise ship where a bunch of people have been quarantined.
The Princess.
Diamond Princess. Alex has some updates.
I'm going to shift gears when we come back into the huge coronavirus developments. It's killing people on the cruise ships now. Multiple cruise ships. People are dying. That means it isn't hype. It is killing people, and it's spreading very fast.
So here's some information that Alex will absolutely never tell his audience about the two people who died on the Diamond Princess cruise ship that's quarantined off the coast of Japan. One was an 87-year-old man who had a history of bronchial asthma. The other was an 84-year-old woman who also had an unspecified pre-existing condition. These deaths are very sad, and I don't mean to minimize them, but demographically, they are the sort of people you would expect to see dying from a virus like this. People in this cohort are the sort of people you expect to see dying of normal flus every year. There's just no way around it. People over the age of 80 with underlying medical conditions are at a much greater risk from things like this than a healthy 30 or 40-year-old person is.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the cruise ship evokes all sorts of mental images that Alex can use to sell more fear about the virus. People are trapped on that boat. They're running out of food. No one's getting let off. Yeah. In reality, there are about 620 people who have tested positive on that boat who are quarantined. Out of the original 3,700 who were on the cruise, the rest of those people, they were quarantined for the 14 days that they needed to be for examination, and then they were released and sent on their way. It's not an ideal situation, and it probably sucks to be quarantined anywhere, but honestly, I would assume a luxury cruise boat is not the worst place ever to be stuck.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot better than the plague ships.
do you think they get to use the pool?
Well, I mean, if it's just them left on the ship, why not? Yeah.
I wondered about that, and then I wondered if it's bad taste for me to wonder about it. I'd be swimming.
I definitely wouldn't be eating the shrimp anymore. That's just a rule.
Probably.
That I have.
Yeah. So we got a situation now where Alex rambles about that a bit, and who cares?
Sure.
He's just full of shit. But he comes back from break to the song Breaking the Law.
Oh, no.
I don't know what he's talking about in this clip. It's a little bit longer, but it's one of his where he turns the song into part of his rant. Like pieces of this, he tries to time it for the choruses and stuff. Like his professional rambling skills are on. This is convoluted. If you can make sense of this, I would appreciate it because I fucking can't.
I'll do my best.
The answer to 1984 is 1776. You're listening to the Alex Jones Show.
Sarah was completely wasting, out of work and down. All inside, it's so frustrating as a trip from town to town. Feels so nobody cares if I let what time.
So I might as well. Put some action in my life.
That sound of the nearest civilization burns away is when tyrants get rid of chivalry, believing people that came before them were wimps. They had all these checks and balances in place. They didn't do all these hard, mean things. They didn't lie. They didn't cheat. They didn't steal. They didn't persecute people. They didn't intimidate. They must have been idiots. No, they always came out of long, bloody decades, sometimes centuries of millions dead and hell on earth, and they promise never to do it again by breaking the law. Breaking the law of God. Breaking the law of common sense. It isn't weaklings that follow chivalry. It's those that know the dark side and seek to bound it in chains so that we might live as free men and women and not live under conquest and tyranny. Not to see the burned cities and destroyed fields and farms laid to waste and the rape and the rapine and evil turned loose, but to empower the great spirit of human ingenuity and freedom by passing limited laws to tie down the tyrant and empower the family and the individual and those that love God. But the tyrants and the control freaks and the Satanists continue to break the law, God's law, common sense, natural law. Everything they do is about saying men are women and women are men and God doesn't exist and there is no right or wrong. Listen to their song. Breaking the law. 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 Breaking the law.
All right.
Breaking the law. Breaking
now we're getting into it.
Breaking the law. Breaking the law. Breaking the law. Breaking the law. Tyler Nixon, Rob, confidant, fellow journalist, army officer, veteran, and lawyer. A lot, obviously, you can't talk about.
Okay, that's yeah. I mean, quite an intro.
That
if that is all the interview with Tyler Nixon's like lead up, if that's the ramp into the interview, you got to be like, "Ooh, yeah, I'm coming in.
I'm coming in hot,
real hot." I don't really know exactly what he was getting at, but I think he felt it.
Yeah, no, he got the spirit. I guess
it's not chivalry like holding doors for ladies. He's talking about it like in the knights,
kind
of way,
so.
Like rules for knights,
right? But I think we're jumping on which side is breaking the law, very liberally, like because at some point he's saying
breaking
that
the
tyrants are defeated by people who break the law because the tyrants instituted a law that
sometimes you have to.
Right, exactly.
Break of the law.
But then we have to make limited laws to rein in the tyrants.
Right.
Those
laws are not weakness.
Right.
They are strength. But the tyrant thinks the laws are weakness. Therefore, a tyrant breaks laws. Therefore, I must break laws.
Wait, but who's the one who's good at breaking the laws
in this circumstance? I really don't know. I think he lost the thread maybe at the beginning.
I would say at the beginning.
Hmm.
I would say the moment he started screaming, breaking the law, he was like, I am loving this chorus.
Love it.
I got to try and work it in there. And then he's like, wait, no, my guy is now the one making the laws.
I'm not positive.
So I don't want to break the laws.
I'm not positive that this requires a ton of analysis outside of just like, I think like this is something I like to bring to the people because it... You know, lately there have been more of these like full songs.
Sure.
That he does.
Sure. Yeah. Like,
these sort of lectures over. And it's the only time that you really feel passion from him. And it's kind of nice to see him alive a little bit, even if it's incoherent and makes no sense. Anyway, he talks to Tyler Nixon. And like I said, I don't really care. It's not in my interest at all to listen to Roger's friend be like, Roger got screwed.
I do like that immediately after playing Breaking the Law, you're like, now we're going to talk to a lawyer.
Who's here to talk about Roger?
Breaking the law?
Okay. So he gets done with talking to Tyler Nixon. It's not a very long interview. And Alex finds himself in a pickle. And that is that there is news about the coronavirus that... He's got a cover. It's so big.
Jesus.
It's such big news.
I'm tired of this.
But he can't. He can't do it.
Why not?
Well, he'll tell you.
Covering something this horrible. Covering something this crazy. Covering something this serious, just mixed in with everything else we're covering, doesn't feel right. I mean, I look at the numbers. I look at the viruses. I look at the scientific papers. I look at the reports, and I just pull back and go, I got up at 5:30 in the morning this morning and I did about an hour of research before my children woke up, before I made them breakfast.
No, you did.
On and what?
I was sitting there reading these scientific reports I'm going to show you.
No, you weren't.
From prestigious groups and double checking it all before I came on air.
Double checking.
And there's just some type of psychological compulsion. Because I'm not somebody that wants to cover stuff up, but it's kind of like the military, when it's got to go to your door and tell you your son just got killed. This is not an enjoyable job.
And Marty's going to tell you your son got killed.
I'm very honored to be here. But I'm ashamed. And I don't blame Trump. He doesn't know who he's hiring or what he's doing. I would at his level. But then when I discover all this, then I want to research every point of it so I get it exactly right because I don't want to make a mistake.
Really?
Imagine the globalists just lie all they want. That must be so easy. You just do whatever you want.
Come on, buddy.
Like studying hours, just getting headaches, trying to like, and calling up virologists and experts and confirming that I'm correct.
Calling a virologist, Alex.
So this is not some dramatic flourish here.
It is.
It is absolutely that.
It's actually, it's above my pay grade.
That's true.
That is
true. I think I've just said it. And I'm not copping out. It's not that I can't cover it.
You're sold out.
I mean, I spent an hour this morning looking at this again. and all the countless shows you've seen with experts, and then I spend more time before the show, and I just don't feel confident talking about this because I might make a mistake.
This is weird, and it goes on forever. There is a story that he's trying to get to.
Yeah.
And he does blurt it out, but it's all in service of what the end goal is. And we all know what that end goal is.
Oh, yeah.
And you'll hear just a moment.
Under Obama, Homeland Security sold the Chinese this virus. And I even found mainstream news 5 years ago saying it, worried about it. The Scientist. That's one of the biggest scientific publications out there. And then I read that. And then I found all the papers. And I'm just like, I'm not a violent person.
Whoa.
Offensively. No. But coming on air and just talking about this is not a normal response. And I'm not calling for violence. I'm just saying, as a father and as a human being, at a certain point, things are so horrible that you just can't make it one more footnote. It's like so bad that I need to really muster my full will and really do some planning on how I talk about this. There, I've said it. I just can't cover this.
Isn't that what doing all that research?
I mean, you heard Boyle on yesterday, and I went and did a bunch of research. He's dead on.
Really?
And then I'm like, why the hell is our government doing this? I know Trump didn't do this then, but the guy he's got running NIH was involved in it at the time.
Is that your boy Fauci?
And they're all involved. And it's just like, they're crazy people. And they're violent. By producing this, they are attacking us. And so as a man, I become a sellout and a wimp if I don't tell people that folks doing this are violent towards everybody and are the same as terrorists or worse, running around with suicide vests or flying airplanes into buildings.
Which was a false flag, according to you.
Yeah, they didn't fly planes into buildings, right?
It becomes something just to bitch about on air. This becomes something of ultimatums to the president. I mean, I don't know.
Really?
Obviously, someone knew the U.S. government did this, and the Chi-Coms
on
purpose to embarrass Trump. Now that they know they had this, and that, there's some big stuff going on here, and so that's why I don't want to say I'm shaken. It's so big, I don't want to go off half-cocked. Because I'm a decisive person, and I'll take action all day long. I'm still got the wheels turning, and I'm trying to figure out exactly what I should do. I just want to beg listeners and viewers, please keep us on air. They're trying to shut us down so that nobody can challenge what they're doing.
God damn you.
Nobody can bring up what's happening.
I ask you, Jordan, who, if not everyone, could have seen it coming that Alex's very sincere, flustered tone about the coronavirus news was all just a lead into a plea for money. If I'm being honest, I think that Alex knows that the products he has to sell that relate to the outbreak are kind of sold out, and he's made a bunch of money off this. There's no real financial bottom line in it for him to cover the virus news from a health fear standpoint, so his coverage in the future is probably going to lean more towards the political intrigue, as we see kind of happening here.
Yeah.
This article that he's talking about in The Scientist that Alex referenced in that clip has nothing to do with Obama selling a virus to the Chinese government. It's about a guy named Ralph Baric, who's an infectious disease researcher at UNC Chapel Hill, creating a chimeric coronavirus for research purposes, which it kicked off a debate about how that probably wasn't worth the risk involved.
Yeah.
It's a debate that goes on within the scientific community.
Right.
This very article says that the U.S. government halted all financial funding from the federal level for research like this, what's known as, quote, gain-of-function studies, as it relates to influenza, SARS, and MERS. Put simply, that refers to adding the function of a pathogen, you know, like giving it an added function in order to better understand its interaction with the world and its hosts. It's long been a hotly debated question if these sorts of studies are ethical, given the potential downsides that they have are practically incalculable.
What I want to do, guys, and hear me out, give me some money for this. I want to make sure that smallpox is 100% fatal in order to study how fatal it would be if we released it into the greater population. I don't think this is a bad idea. Give me one bad reason.
You have that's a farcical take on what these studies are, but I mean,
yeah.
I mean, it's add something to this on a genetic level in order to test it. So in 2015, the scientists published an article about this guy at UNC Chapel Hill who did a gain of function study on a coronavirus, but it's definitely not the same virus that's currently breaking out from China. This article is not a study, though it does involve a study conducted by Ralph Baric, and there's no chance that Alex read that study, and even if he did, it has nothing to do with the current situation. That legitimately seems like it's Alex's only primary source on this, and nothing in there says or even implies that Obama or Homeland Security sold a virus to China. In fact, it explicitly says that no federal funding went to that study, nor any like it, for at least the 2 years prior. So Obama had even less to do with this. Alex has had his fun with the public health panic sales drive, but his heart isn't in it anymore, so he doesn't quite know where to go with things. The natural choice is to make it a political thriller, but I think he also realizes that he can't pull that off without totally saying that Trump is complicit with releasing a bioweapon on innocent civilians. So he's kind of in a tough spot.
Yeah, he's in a bit of a bind here.
Yeah, and that leads him to just like cover this on a very surface level, but with his like, I can't cover this. I'm going to go off half-cocked.
Oh, man.
But it was cooked up by Homeland Security under Obama, according to the scientist, lab-made coronavirus triggers debate. The creation of Chimera SARS-like virus has scientists discussing the risk of gain of function. And you read the article, it's the exact weird virus popped up that Bill and Melinda Gates have now patented.
Oh, really?
And it's all hidden in plain view. And I've got all the papers.
This clip came at the end of like 10 additional minutes of Alex being real insecure about how he can't cover the virus news.
Sure.
In the approximately half an hour of his show he dedicated to talking about how he can't talk about the virus news for fear of making a mistake, he could have easily covered whatever story he thinks is the big scoop. This is performance, and Alex is playing the role of the student who forgot to do their fucking homework. And it really shows in that clip we just heard. There's absolutely no depth there at all. You just hear Alex grasping at straws to try and make this somehow sound researched. The headline about the lab-made virus causing debate is not about Obama or the Department of Homeland Security making a virus. It was that researcher at UNC Chapel Hill, and the debate was in the scientific community. He's completely misrepresenting that source. Instance of Alex not knowing what he's talking about, number one. Alex says that if you read the article, it's just the same exact coronavirus that popped up in December in China. This is not true. He's making that up. Instance of Alex not knowing what he's talking about, number two. Then Alex tries to say that this virus from the 2015 article is the same one that the Gates Foundation has a patent for. It wasn't the Gates Foundation. It was the Purebred Institute. And it wasn't a patent on a coronavirus. It was a vaccine for chickens. And it wasn't identical to the virus mentioned in the article in The Scientist.
Sure.
Instances of Alex not knowing what he's talking about, numbers 3, 4, and 5.
Yep.
That clip is less than 30 seconds long, and Alex reveals clearly that he has no idea what he's talking about 5 times. This is why he does 30 minutes on his show about how he can't cover the news, because he knows his shit's weak. There's a whole lot of nothing here. But you can make nothing look like something with theatrics like this. The article in The Scientist is a complete zero in terms of Alex's narratives, but if he can completely act fucked up about it on air, like he can't do his job because the news is so big, that passion will sell the weak shit to his audience without him even trying to engage with what's in the article or the study. I'm not trying to sit here and pretend that Alex is some kind of like he's a conniving genius, but he does things for a reason. He absolutely wouldn't have a job if his audience stopped for a second to ask themselves why he's doing the things he's doing. Every now and again, like, oh, that's weird. Why are you behaving like that?
Yeah.
Oh, that's why. You're just trying to gild the lily.
I hate being gaslit so much, especially when it comes to this, because it's like, we do this show. I see you do hours upon hours upon hours of research, and it sounds like the way you talk.
Mm-hmm.
I don't do any research, nope. And that sounds far more similar to the way Alex talks.
Right.
Now, doesn't that make sense there?
And you're sometimes wrong, and I can point out generally, like,
because you did all the research. Wow.
And even the stuff that I can do is imperfect. Like,
yeah.
I'm wrong every now and again, and you know, we certainly try our best to cop to that. And in situations particularly surrounding like the fine points of the law and science,
those are
two areas where, you know, I have to wear my inability on my sleeve. Like, those are not subjects that I'm well equipped in. Sometimes I can read stuff over and get a good sense of it. Sometimes, like today, I can't. I actually consulted a specialist to get to the bottom of some of the stuff that we're going to end up discussing.
All right.
But it's important to like to recognize that, like, yes, the way Alex speaks about these things is indicative of someone who doesn't know what he's talking about. And all you need to do is listen to someone who knows what they're talking about.
Exactly.
And that's not necessarily me all the time. But the difference between, let's say, an expert and an InfoWars expert, it's a wide chasm.
There's a big gap there.
Yes.
It reminds me, so the way that he's doing this, the way that he's selling this stuff reminds me so much of, like, I was I remember working with one of those road hack headliners at the club in Aurora, and I could not understand why this guy was fucking killing, mm-hmm. because he was garbage. And then after one of the shows, he came up to me and was like, "You know what your problem is? You're not selling your jokes, man. Mm-hmm. You got to really sell them. Even if they're weak, if you sell the jokes right, you can get a lot out of it."
Yeah.
And I was like, "Oh yeah, that makes sense."
Yeah, it's 90% facade.
Yeah,
10% substance, maybe, and sometimes not even that.
What are you doing trying to write jokes? Stop it.
Yeah, fool's game. Yeah. Do you want a life being a shitty headliner?
Yeah, exactly.
These
Do you
one-niters?
Want this glamorous life?
Yeah. Then sell your jokes. So Alex has decided that the U.S. sold the virus to China, and he has an agenda. He thinks he's figured out why, but he's. Oh, he doesn't know, and that's why you need to fund InfoWars.
Of course.
So they can stay on air long enough to figure this out, I guess. This is so stupid. This is offensively stupid.
Why would the U.S. sell this to the Chi-Coms, and then 5 years later it's released, clearly so the Chi-Coms can crack down and take over Taiwan? This is big, is what I'm saying. It's big. And I don't know exactly what's going on, but man, this is the big enchilada. That's all I'm saying. And so my brain is like a computer, like bzzz, thinking, and it hasn't popped out the answers yet. And my gut, my spirit, my brain's never wrong. Yours
Except
isn't
always.
Yeah, there is that.
Till it's there. But this is bad. This is bad. This is bad. This is bad. This
is it bad?
This is bad.
How is it?
It's bad.
Oh. Okay. So his working theory is that the lockdown of Wuhan is just to set the stage for taking over Taiwan. I don't know. Anyway, what? Your hand is up.
It's to set the stage for China taking Taiwan or the United States taking Taiwan?
China taking Taiwan. Look, dude.
I'm sorry. I'm getting bogged down in the wrong details.
Everything's very convoluted.
Apologies.
Some of it might become a little clearer as we go along, but some of it absolutely won't. Some of it is just nonsensical.
Breaking the law.
So we learned something here. For a while, Alex has been pushing this narrative that the Canadian lab, the one in Winnipeg, is the source the stuff, because there was those two Chinese folks who were expelled from the lab. Turns out that might not be true.
So they're just introducing us to the new AIDS of the new millennium. And this isn't just going to be
something
that kills people that have anal sex or whatever, or use needles. This is something that's going to kill you and your family and make you have a heart attack and make your lungs bleed out. And it totally sucks. And so that's why metaphysically we all are concerned, because we know, this is big. It is big. And it was produced in the United States, not Canada. That was all put out as disinformation.
Sure.
And they even hid the damn thing in plain sight.
Oh, shit. It turns out the Canada stuff was misinformation. That's wild, because I heard a ton of coverage about how the virus was stolen from that lab in Winnipeg on Alex's show from Alex and his trusted experts like the health ranger, Mike Adams. But that can't possibly be the case, because Alex's gut is never wrong. He's right 99% of the time. So there's no way he would have spent a ridiculous amount of time on his show trying to spread conspiracy theories about that lab in the past. Oh, no, it's misinformation.
No, he said disinformation, Dan. That means that it was targeted and it was on purpose. So it's not his fault that he got it wrong.
Wait,
they
it
tricked
is.
Him.
It is.
Okay,
that
well,
means
yes.
His gut is wrong.
Now, you may say that.
Right.
But his gut was telling him not to go with it, but he went ahead with it anyways because the health ranger.
Here's the thing. It was in the long distant past, though. Like, he got tricked by that, but he's, you know.
That's true.
Yeah.
But he's contrite.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's not like he was saying that shit on February 16th, which was last Sunday. I don't know. Let's listen to a little bit of that.
I mean, I got to go to Mike Adams and stop just reading all these headlines. Everything Mike said two, 3 weeks ago has now come true.
Okay. Like what?
It's over for humanity. There will only be lone survivors.
All right, fine.
That one you served up on a platter.
I might have played that first clip only as an excuse to keep the streak alive of Mike's apocalypse prediction. So here we have on Thursday, we have Alex saying that the Canada stuff is just misinformation. But on Sunday, here is what he was saying.
I agree with you now. My assessment has changed in the last week. I believe this was also a deliberate release. That's interesting. Just said that
It's under for humanity.
That it was introduced possibly by an agent working in that virology lab in Wuhan, but it was.
Oh yeah, I forgot. Now the scientist that reportedly stole it from Canada is dead.
Yeah,
and a bunch of other people are getting killed. I'm sorry, there's just so many angles here.
On Sunday we've got Alex talking about the guy who ran that Canada lab being killed.
He was killed.
He's dead. So this is a conspiracy theory about that Canadian lab where the two Chinese people were taken out of the lab back in July. That was Dr. Kuo and her husband, Kidding Cheng. Now, if you come to the present day, CTV News reported back on February 4th that a man named Frank Plummer, the former head of the National Microbiology Lab, which is the lab in Winnipeg, had passed away at the age of 67. This is a very sad story, but if you actually read articles about his passing, it doesn't look like this was a murder or even suspicious, which Alex is definitely trying to imply. From that CTV News article, quote, In December, Plummer shared details of his personal battle with alcohol use disorder after undergoing experimental brain treatment to treat it. He told CTV News how using alcohol to relax after work progressed to a habit that saw him drinking up to 20 ounces of whiskey a night, leading to cirrhosis and end-stage liver disease diagnosis in 2012. Citing the stress of responding to pandemics, he said that he was unable to stop himself from returning to alcohol after a 2014 liver transplant. He ended up getting that experimental procedure done. What it did is it implanted electrodes in his brain, and it turns out that that did have some positive effect on his desire to drink. That said, he clearly was the kind of drinker who would have done serious damage to his body by that point. So it's good that you can stop drinking, but you'd already had cirrhosis and a liver transplant and kept drinking. It's very, very sad. It's true that Plummer was the head of the same lab that these two Chinese scientists were removed from, but Plummer couldn't have had anything to do with that situation since he left his position in 2014, citing personal reasons, most likely the severe alcoholism.
Yeah.
This is sloppy shit on Alex's part and a deep disrespect to Dr. Plummer's passing. From everything I can tell, he was a fantastic researcher who struggled with some heavy demons, only to get his life back on track, which is inspirational and also tragic.
Yep.
Conspiracies don't care about people. People are things, mere props to be used to make narratives sound more convincing to the audience, who are also people who don't matter to the conspiracy. The people listening, they too are just props to spread the narratives. This is all very disgusting, and it's for all Alex's talk about like all these dehumanizing aspects of the globalists.
Yeah.
It would take a second to think about him treating this doctor's death as a mere prop to be thrown out to support the narrative that the virus was stolen from this lab in Winnipeg, which he's now saying is misinformation a mere couple days later. This is what it takes to be an InfoWars believer. To take this show seriously, you have to believe that a guy who tries to use a doctor's death to prop up a conspiracy on Sunday, he says that all that Canadian lab stuff was misinformation on Thursday. You have to believe that that guy is a good source of information and someone you should trust.
Yep.
So,
yeah, it reminds me when Schreier is like, look at all this cult behavior. All I'm doing is taking direct orders from a guy who says he's right 100% of the time and is the only one who can save us from the tyranny. They're the cult members.
Right.
Yeah.
So we get back to, I just want to take a little diversion there to hear the a little bit of that from Sunday to be like, you were just talking about the Canadian lab stuff. Yeah. Go fuck yourself with this. Oh, it's all misinformation.
100%.
But I was wondering, like, why? And actually what changed? What ended up changing? And it relates a little bit to that article in The Scientist. And also, I got a weigh in by way of the headline that Alex reads here. Back on the February 20th.
Smoking gun. China bought weaponized Wuhan virus from U.S.
So that's just a headline that Alex is reading, but he never gets to the contents of that article. And that's probably because the article doesn't have anything in it for him to read. It's just an InfoWars article with an embedded video of yet another stupid interview he did with Francis Boyle. He's just reporting on his own interview, just reading the headline.
I really don't think that's okay.
It's dumb, and I'll explain the main argument of it here in a second. But first, I wanted to play you this intro for that video that's in that article that I find very hilarious.
They admit they did this. You've reverse engineered it, an incredible job. Do you think it was done on purpose then? Who stands to gain? Key Bono, as a law professor, who would do this? Who stands to gain?
The clip of Alex talking is the cold open of the clip, but hilariously, the way the video is edited, it kind of sounds like he's asking who gains from all this coronavirus business, and then a
Band.video!
Exactly. If that's some editor fucking around and trying to make fun of Alex's completely disgraceful behavior over the last month or so, it's one of the best jokes I've seen on this show in a while. And if it's not, and it's just someone doing a straight editing job, their subconscious might be trying to tell them something.
Yeah.
As for the smoking gun, that's just Francis Boyle pretending to be a science expert. Here he is laying it out in this next clip.
The smoking gun here is on page 11, near the bottom, the last full paragraph from the bottom, where it says, may provide a gain of function to the coronavirus for efficient spreading in the human population.
So explain what that gain of function means, because not all of us are experts on this like you, Doctor.
Right. Well, gain of function. So let me repeat, Alex, as I've told you before, gain of function technology is DNA genetic engineering of dangerous biological warfare substances to begin with.
It's like the souping up of already bad pathogens.
Right. It's a turbocharging. And gain-of-function work can only be done safely in a BSL-4 or a BSL-3 facility. So I think clearly this is the smoking gun that the Wuhan coronavirus came out of, that BSL-4 facility.
So, Francis Boyle has found the words gain of function in a study posted on Science Direct about the 2019 coronavirus, which is ultimately going to be connected to that 2015 article from The Scientist about a gain of function study on the coronavirus, on a coronavirus, Thus, these two must be the same thing, and that study in 2015 was clearly the cover for the creation of the virus that is now in outbreak. I can see how this game is probably super fun to play. You just find words and then yell about them, but this is really stupid. Francis Boyle is a lawyer. He has absolutely no background in science, and he really should not be offering opinions about this, because when he suggests that there being a gain of function in the 2019 coronavirus, that's a smoking gun proof that it was engineered as a bioweapon? He sounds like a fucking dum-dum. Gain-of-function studies are studies where pathogens are given other properties to test their responses, but that's not the only use of the word. This is really indicative of Boyle not even doing basic research on the topic, because if he had, he could have learned very quickly that gain of function is a category of mutation that happens naturally, as is loss of function. When that Science Direct article is talking about there being a possible gain of function in the 2019 coronavirus, that makes it more spreadable, it's talking about natural mutation that that could set it apart from other viruses in its clade. This is a little bit outside my pay grade from a science perspective, so I consulted with an expert on these matters who made me insist that I not call him our health ranger. As it was explained to me, this 2015 study was looking at SARS and was based on a prediction that in the future, viruses like it would become less picky about ACE2 cleavage. And to study that, they augmented an existing SARS-like virus in a way that would make it more readily cleaved by an ACE2 receptor. The goal was to evaluate the risks of other coronaviruses that were circulating in bat populations and what we needed to prepare for if this mutation to ACE2 receptivity did happen. We saw that.
Gotcha.
Conversely, the 2019 paper is an analysis of the current coronavirus, which found that there is a mutation that has occurred that allows the virus to cleave with furin sites, which is intrinsically different than the work that they were doing in that 2015 study. In effect, the finding of the 2019 paper invalidates the hypothesis of the 2015 study, which is to say that the prior study predicted that future SARS-like viruses would affect humans due to changes in ACE2 receptor cleavage, whereas this paper is asserting that that was incorrect, and that the current coronavirus is possibly as widespread as it is because it bypasses the difficulty of ACE2 cleavage altogether, going the furin route instead. While this has some scary implications, in as much as furin cleavage is a simpler process and could make this virus much easier for people to get, it's not all bad news. If this is the fact, how the 2019 coronavirus is taken in by the body, there are already a ton of treatments and preventative drugs that could be effective against furin cleavage. This essentially opens up a ton of options for medical treatment if this paper is shown to be perfectly correct.
All right.
I have no business discussing the nitty-gritty of this hardcore science stuff. So to put it simply, these two papers are nowhere near about the same thing. Even if the 2015 study were proof of the creation of a deadly bioweapon, it still could not possibly be the same virus as the 2019 coronavirus, since the changes to ACE2 cleavage in that study have literally nothing to do with the furin cleavage, which is the discussion about the current virus.
Sure.
They're two completely different things. Whatever gain of function was being discussed in that UNC Chapel Hill thing is fundamentally, intrinsically different than whatever mutation is being discussed. Just because those same words are there,
right,
that's the connection that's being made.
Okay.
That's why you don't listen to Francis Boyle about science-related issues.
All right, so if I understand this correctly, based on what you've described to me, the 2015 paper is talking about ACE2 cleavage, which is something that is less common and something that we're not as prepared for. So the study there was trying to figure out if this is the way that it mutates, then we need to be able to prepare for ACE2 cleavage.
The cleaving,
and then the 2019
the ACE2 cleaving in the sites is the way it was described to me. It's very finicky between populations.
Yeah.
So like something that would bind to or not, the binding is simple, but the cleaving is not.
Right.
So it would something that would be taken in by ACE2 receptors in a bat, let's say, is not the same as would be taken in by humans through the ACE2 receptors.
Right.
So there is differences there that cause an inability for one thing to affect different animal populations.
Oh, okay.
So the study that they were doing is testing if it was easier. Could humans be susceptible to other coronaviruses that were traveling in bat communities?
Gotcha.
Now, all of that is irrelevant to the mutation that's being discussed in this 2019 paper.
Gotcha.
Or I guess it was just recent, so it's 2020 paper.
Sure.
So, yes.
I got it.
And a real scientist would know the difference, and they would never behave like this.
Yeah.
They wouldn't go on Alex's show and help him misinform people about an active public health crisis. This is just depressingly bad.
Gotcha.
Or maybe, Jordan, I'm being a real prick, and there's something more to this theory. Maybe Boyle clicked on all the authors in the 2015 paper, all their names. Maybe he found something suspicious.
And it has all these people there from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. It has someone from the Food and Drug Administration. So you can trust the Food and Drug Administration. And then at the very bottom of the list, who is involved?
Obama.
Zhengli Li-Shi, key laboratory of special pathogens and biosafety, Wuhan Institute of Virology, Chinese Academy of Sciences, Wuhan, China.
Dun, dun, dun.
It's clear to me that this scientist from the Wuhan Institute of Virology got this gain of function technology for SARS from this University of North Carolina lab.
No. This is very interesting, though I'm not sure it proves that the scientist from the Wuhan Institute of Virology got some super virus from this study, which is ridiculous bullshit.
It's like a movie.
You know, if you actually read a study, you can learn what individual contributors did for the study. It's in the contributions section.
No, you can't. They just list the authors and then you move on.
Zhengli Li-Shi provided some materials that were needed, namely the sequences of the coronavirus that they were studying. So it's less a matter of the Wuhan lab getting something from this experiment as much as it was providing it. That's why they got a credit on the final study.
Not only are they're wrong in 180 degrees?
Seems like it.
God damn it, I hate them.
And guess what? Francis Boyle did such a lazy job of reading the study that he completely missed that there was a second person on it from Wuhan involved. Jing Yi Ji was also an author on the study, and Boyle doesn't seem to realize that. Also, if he's going to say that anyone on this study is automatically somehow suspicious, why is he leaving off that another author that was named was Antonio Lanzavecchia, who's from the Institute of Research and Biomedicine in Zurich, Switzerland. Shouldn't that be sounding off an alarm? Oh,
absolutely.
No,
he's from Zurich.
The Swiss.
The Swiss are coming.
It's not, because I'm certain that Francis Boyle didn't uncover this study. He just found it on a dumb conspiracy website, and he's regurgitating it for Alex's audience, lending it credibility by virtue of his position as this guy who wrote a law.
Great.
This has all the fingerprints of some lazy conspiracy site, because they missed the second researcher from Wuhan. This is what happens when someone scanning names sees one that points towards their predetermined conclusion and says, good enough, the dumb dumbs will buy this,
yep.
Put it to print.
Yep.
There's nothing fundamentally suspicious about a couple of Chinese researchers having co-author credits on a paper that has to do with the SARS-like coronavirus. If you don't recall, their country has a bit of a history on the subject. It makes sense that there will be a possibility of collaboration there.
No. They had a history, and so they just decided never to worry about coronavirus-like behavior ever again.
There's nothing fundamentally suspicious about this. So far, I see no smoking gun, and quite frankly, I don't even know if I see a gun without smoke.
I don't see anything.
No.
I see an emperor without clothes. Does that make sense?
So Alex asks Boyle, how'd you find this, man? This is dead to rights stuff.
Googled it.
By the way, Dr. Boyle, stay right there.
Sure.
I'm reading the paper. I mean, I know you had big news. You sent us links, but I'm just now reading it.
What?
And you talk about smoking gun. This is the Chinese government paying for the exact same thing with a U.S. lab.
No. Nope.
How did you discover this? This is smoking gun. How the hell did you find this?
Googled it.
Well, Alex, I told you that it's part of my professional responsibilities to stay on top of biological warfare. So I came across it and in my research. That's just part of the job I do.
Look, you're explaining it very well, sir.
So there's so much wrong with this clip. Like, for one, Alex says that he's just getting to reading the study, which literally means he's reading it while Boyle is talking, which is simultaneously a bad way to interview and a bad way to read. You're just going to do a bad job of both. Second, Boyle is giving up the game. If you watch the video when he's describing how he found this information, he has a little smile on his face. And he just says that's part of the job. That, all in a day's work. Aw, shucks. It's just what heroes do. Stuff is horse shit. This is a man who knows he can't tell Alex where he got the information from, because if he did, he would instantly reveal that he didn't do any research, he just found it on a conspiracy blog. Weirdly, an article covering very similar territory was published on February 15th, a couple days before this interview took place, on Zero Hedge. This was about a Chinese researcher who theorized that the virus could have escaped from the lab in Wuhan, who points out that Zheng Li Shi works at the Wuhan lab and was involved in that North Carolina study in 2015, which would explain why Boyle seems unaware of the other people on that study.
Yeah.
Boyle is not a scientist. He does not keep up with scientific journals. He's just a conspiracy theorist who happens to teach law. And he read some dumb shit, probably on Zero Hedge. Now he's playing the role of a genius researcher who cracked the case with Alex. Also, that part about China paying for the study is because Boyle is cherry-picking stuff out of the acknowledgments. The study was partially funded by an award from the National Natural Science Foundation of China. But, he kind of leaves off that there were also grants from the National Institutes of Aging. That might sound weird, but, why aging people? Why is that in there? Well, probably because things like coronaviruses mostly kill the elderly. So finding treatments and prevention for it would really have the effect of drastically improving the lives of the older set.
That's where you're mistaking it. See, it's from the Institute of De-Aging. Mm. All right. They're trying to get rid of old people. That's why they created this virus.
Go tell it to Alex.
Okay. I think that might work.
Yeah. This is all weak shit, and I demand a real answer from Francis Boyle. Where did you find this stuff?
No.
I want a strict accounting of this give Alex.
It's my job to stay on top of things. I just came across it research.
Your answer sucks.
I'm not going to give you a source.
So we don't need to listen to any more of Boyle's shit, but I do want to say that there's something particularly hilarious about this interview. Alex is going on and on about how there's a smoking gun stuff and they've got the globalists dead to right and they've proved that the virus is a bioweapon. And instead of getting into the specifics of the research and demonstrating their argument past surface level things like I found two articles that have the word gain of function in them, or like I saw a Chinese person involved in this study, instead of doing any of that, Alex does a long plug for his products. It's really easy to use this kind of conversation to drive sales when you know everything that's happening on your show isn't real. And that's what's going on. Because if not, Alex would be like, holy shit, call everybody, everybody.
Yeah, seriously.
Like, he'd be freaking out. Like,
if that's real, then
He gives up that he doesn't believe the stories he's telling by his, lackadaisical sales pitch for 5 minutes in the middle of this video. There's another reality that we need to discuss, and I think it might help in explaining Alex's unwillingness to get into the virus news on his February 20th show. I was speculating that it's because, hey, everything's sold out, no real financial motive to do this. Yeah. But I actually, now that I I've watched this Boyle interview and see that he's saying that there's a smoking gun, that the U.S. sold this bioweapon to try all this stuff, I think he realizes he's gone too far.
Oh, yeah.
I think so. The narrative has come to completion already. That's a huge problem.
That's true. That is true.
Yeah. This mystery is solved.
Yeah. Yeah. It was the government who sold it. Yeah. This is an episode. Yeah. This is Clue. You know.
So he already has the world's number one fake authority on the science of bioweapons, Francis Boyle, right, coming on his show and giving him absolute, definitive, smoking gun proof that not only is the coronavirus lab-made, but that Alex is now in possession of the documents that prove that this lab in North Carolina created it in 2015 at the behest of the Chinese government, who paid for its creation. There is no mystery. It is a solved case.
Unfurl the sign. Mission accomplished.
According to the reality of his show, Boyle is a credible source, and it's been proven that the researchers at UNC Chapel Hill made China a bioweapon because they wanted money. The problem with this is, from a narrative standpoint, there's nowhere good to go. Alex knows that his proof isn't proof, and any real scientist that looks at it, or any court or legal investigator, would laugh in his face. So that route is not going to work. That's one direction he could go, trying to pursue legal action against the folks in North Carolina, but he knows that's a dead end, and it probably could result in a countersuit.
That he would lose.
So where does that leave things? If you're presenting to your audience that you have definitive smoking gun evidence that this is a bioweapon and, you know, they were selling it to China and it's the most deadly thing ever, and well,
it's over for humanity. There will only be lone survivors.
Then what do you think the natural conclusion someone might come to is?
Take action. You need to go solve it. We need to stop this.
Do you not think that you're getting dangerously close to the point where your audience is going to start calling in and saying, hey, why aren't you telling us to, like, you should be telling us to burn down UNC Chapel Hill and kill those scientists?
Yeah, absolutely. They're murdering thousands of people right now.
Alex, you've proven this.
Yeah.
You have it dead to rights, smoking gun. Why aren't you, like, look.
Call the fucking cops, at least.
Or, yeah, no.
Something.
No, 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 no. The cops are globalists.
That's fair.
Like, it's a problem with his rhetoric. Yeah. If he has proven demonstrably that this is a bioweapon that's killing hundreds and hundreds of people, and you've cracked the conspiracy,
yeah,
you need to call in the mobs now. Yeah. That's based on everything that exists in Alex's show. That's like where he should be. So Alex has backed himself into a corner with the sensationalism of his coronavirus coverage. According to InfoWars, this is a civilizational level threat that's definitely a bioweapon. And now he accidentally allowed Francis Boyle to come on and definitively name the culprits. This kind of leaves Alex with only a few choices. One is to continue escalating and risk one of his listeners taking him seriously and trying to hurt the folks at UNC, which is kind of the natural conclusion a person would have listening to his show. Another option is to throw Boyle under the bus and say that he's wrong about this, but if Alex does that, he risks calling into question all the other stuff that Boyle has told him about the outbreak, and it also risks his ability to have Boyle on when the next outbreak comes and he needs to sell his survival food. I guess the third option is this. Be a coward and ramble for about half an hour about how you can't cover the story because it's already a solved case and the only thing left to do for Alex is rally the troops. This is really, really a good case study for why, even if you're a propagandist conspiracy theorist, and even if it seems like it's appealing to dabble in the pandemic outbreak stuff, it's just not a good idea to go all in with it. It's a delicate conspiracy game. And as you can see here, it's not even a line that a pro like Alex can walk well.
This is like an episode of Law and Order where they like go through all the facts of the case and they solve the mystery and they're like, all right, we got him. The end. And they never do anything else.
Bom, bom, bom,
yeah, it's just bom. Like, hey, we figured out who it was. Next case.
I mean, it's a real problem for Alex's narratives to have solved it. Like, you can't do that.
No,
it doesn't. Like, what do you do now?
Yeah.
You agitate against the people in North Carolina, I guess. I mean, what do you do?
If you are actually telling me in real life, 100% true, that you know exactly who is infecting thousands of people, killing people all over the world, and nobody is doing anything about it, there's two guys there who literally did this, then it's like, let's go find them. I don't know what to do here. Call the FBI.
It's not
something.
It's nonsensical. And like, there's really nothing you can do.
No.
For Alex, there are no real good options.
Just move on. Pretend it never
happened.
Francis
Boyle kind of fucked him.
Yeah. Well, I think he fucked himself.
Well, of course.
He asked Francis Boyle to prove it.
Yes.
Yeah. So no, it's
Francis Boyle fucked him over by doing exactly what Alex wanted.
Yeah, exactly. As always, Alex fucked himself over.
It's not what Alex wanted.
No.
Alex needs to live in that in-between space. Like, I've talked about it before. The kind of panic that Alex wants is the kind that drives you to buy his products, not the point where you like you feel justified in actually torching a building.
Yeah.
That is the wrong kind of fanaticism for Alex, by and large. If it does come, he gets to call it a false flag, and he can deal with it.
Yeah,
generally, but he doesn't want that because it's more trouble than it's worth usually. So Alex is done with this now for the time being. We took a little bit of a diversion there down to the Sunday episode and then his interview with Boyle, because I think it's important. Like, he is not explaining that headline, the smoking gun thing.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, I think we need to address it for the sake of completion with our coverage. But now we get back to the February 20th show, and Alex is back on the Trump is about to pardon Roger kick.
Trump is set to speak on prison reform, and I'm sure that'll be Roger Stone. As soon as that happens, we're going to go to it. We have another special guest popping in, but I'll get to all your calls.
See, he's got a special guest. He said Randy Cretico is going to be on the show.
Randy Cretico. Yeah, and we've already had Tyler assume. Nixon. So, yeah. We're gold. It's on.
I thought for sure Randy Cretico. Alex has said it. But in the meantime, he goes to calls, and this caller seems weird.
Have you heard of the Cosmic Cowboy Trilogy?
I've heard that name, but I've never, what is it? Is it a book?
Yeah, it's a movie script that I wrote in 2011, and it prophesied the move, Trump's move to the embassy move in Jerusalem in 2018. So it was like a 9-year prophetic look.
Well, yeah, I've heard of that.
Of course I've heard of that. What is it?
You see how full of shit Alex is? Oh, anytime a caller's like, you aware of this? I know everything.
Oh,
so of course I know the Cosmic Cowboy Trilogy.
Yeah, it's a script that I wrote.
Whoa.
Shit.
That happens a lot with Alex. Like, he things he could not possibly be aware of.
He claims
to be aware of. There's just, I like that. That's
what
really
do I
funny.
Have in my pockets? Yeah. Is it a ring? Ha ha ha.
So Alex plays a commercial. He goes to break, and he comes back, and this commercial is on the show. And it's for this thing. He has a new website, OperationWin2020.com.
Sure.
And what it is basically just a place where people can get those duct tape stickers to put over their mouths
<All right. laughs>
to go to Trump rallies.
Great.
That all say Infowars.com on them, of course. One of them says, I am Q. Tried to capitalize all the QAnon people.
So bad.
It's dumb. He's just like, we can take over these Trump rallies, and we can take over everything with all we have to do, put stickers on our mouths. We don't need to listen to the commercial, but there's one part that's pretty funny.
Visit OperationWin2020.com to discover how you can join the Second American Revolution and secure the First Amendment, not just for ourselves, but for future generations. I recently told the former head of psychological warfare at the State Department, Dr. Steve Pachenik, about our plan, and he loved it.
Steve.
I'm Steve Pachenik, and I approve of this message. I recently told Steve Pachenik about this, and he loved it.
He loved it.
So you know it's great.
Who are you to judge my plans? You know it's great. Steve loves it. All right. So after that commercial, Alex gets around to his special guest, and I was like, fucking sweet. Let's get Cretico on here. Maybe he'll do an impression or two.
I would love it.
I'm going to stop right here. I'm just going to be straight up with you. I don't need to have this guest on to sell storable food. This ties into the coronavirus and how crazy it is, and that weeks ago, almost all of the big food companies have sold out.
His fucking guest is the guy who runs My Patriot Supply.
God damn it.
It's just his food sponsor.
That's a surprise guest?
God special guest.
Special guest. Ugh.
Well, he's on because he has a very important message, and that is, hey, y'all, prices going up.
Yeah.
And yes, we're selling storable food here. I sell it when there's not a crisis going on. What concerns me is we're a month into this and food sales aren't going down. They're going up. And so you guys, I was talking to you last night and this morning, you're going to have to raise prices a little bit because food prices are going up.
Prices going up.
Hold on. Let me ask you a question, Dan. Have you and I ever done an episode where maybe Alex says specifically that these guys are great because they are not opportunists who are raising prices in the face of a crisis?
Yeah, man, but they have to because
they have to.
They talk about this quite a bit. Like, their price for the raw material is already gone up.
Oh,
and
of
they've
course.
Eaten it.
Yeah.
They've eaten the. They have to pass it along eventually.
Of course.
Or else they're never going to.
No, they can't turn a profit.
No. So Alex asks him, like, you know, hey, what's going on with this situation? This guy, what a dum-dum.
If you notice that the death count, or not the death count, I'm sorry, the those infected in the U.S., the number was like 15. Suddenly you can't get that number. Or the number that are under quarantine or self-quarantine in the U.S. You saw a story a couple of days ago, 4,500 in California, quarantined or under self-quarantine, 712 in the state of Washington. Why is there nobody adding up that number to tell us what the picture truly is? And why has the number of infections number kind of just stopped being reported?
I have no idea what self-quarantine means, but I would assume that would be a figure that is impossible to report accurately.
No, it's people who don't go outside much.
How is anyone going to be able to accurately capture the figure of how many people are self-isolating? Seems outside the scope of a researcher. As for the U.S. cases of the virus, this dude's just making it up that people have stopped reporting on it. There's an article right here from the New York Times with the headline, Coronavirus Cases in the U.S. Reach 34. There's an article in CBS News right here about how many of the people, who represent that uptick from the previous figure are U.S. citizens who were evacuated from the Diamond Princess cruise ship and are now being quarantined in the United States.
Sure.
There hasn't been a media blackout about this. It's a topic that's being covered. You can find the stories easily if you look for them. However, if you're trying to drive sales for disaster survival food, it's in your best interest to pretend that there's a cover-up going on, since that tends to imply that things are way worse than they appear and you definitely need survival food right now. This is all disingenuous exploitation of a public health event to translate it into money. These people should be ashamed of themselves and their sales practices.
Every time. Why aren't there any Muslim leaders condemning this acts of terrorism? Why? None of them ever do it. You never see them do that shit.
Uh-huh.
Like, every fucking time. Just open your lying pieces of shit.
Look, dude, they recognize that there is people who are panicking about this situation,
and
this public health.
Trying to exploit them.
No, they're not. They wish it wasn't happening.
But so the fact that you've gotten to the point behind the scenes and you're willing to say it on air that, yeah, our prices are about to go up in a few weeks, and if it
real
keeps on like
it.
This, let's just be honest. I was talking just to tragic. You, and I was talking to the founder, Matt Reddock. You guys are like, we're going 24 hours a day, and we've got the food. We don't know. This is scary. It's only going up. We just wish this wasn't as big a crisis. We wish it would stop. We're scared. I don't know. We didn't pre-talk about this, but I'm just being honest about behind the scenes. You've never seen anything like this.
Never.
We wish we weren't making so much money.
We didn't pre-talk about this.
That means you pre-talked about it.
Yeah. Why are you even doing that vocal tick where you reveal you're lying before you even say something?
I think it's because he knows what he's doing is really gross.
Yeah, that's possible.
I think he's a bit self-conscious about how fucking insanely gross this is.
Yeah.
Hey, this is the biggest food sale ever, man.
Sure.
Like, everybody's making a run on this food. And Alex asks this guy, food guy, why that is.
Why do you think it's so big? Why do you think this is the biggest food sale? I mean, am I right? This is the biggest food sale we've ever seen.
This is the biggest of all time for us, as we've been in our partnership and business together here. Absolutely. It's because people don't really know, because we're not getting the true information.
Or they're getting lied to by
is
Alex.
Is that why?
Yeah, I guess.
It's because people don't know.
Technically, I do think he's accurate. Like,
well, yeah.
It's the biggest food sale because people are getting bad information. They're just
right.
Getting bad information from the guy who's selling your food.
Yeah. On purpose.
Also, speaking of bad information, Alex keeps talking about how all these other food companies, they don't even have food. They have long wait times.
All out.
I called a bunch of them.
Did you?
Yeah.
Man, it must have been really impossible to get a hold of anybody. I'm sure their phones are blocked up too.
No,
they don't have any food. Their phones have been cut.
I called some other food companies, other survival food companies, and they all have about the same perspective that this guy does.
Yeah.
They are all at about a 10-day delivery window. Up from whatever their normal window is because of increased loads.
Of course.
I discussed with a couple of them about like whether or not they have food, and they're like, oh, of course.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Of course we do.
Yeah.
We are a business.
Yeah.
In order for us to continue to be a business, we have to do the business part.
Right.
Yeah.
All the survival food companies are going through an increase of sales because of people like Alex who are sensationalizing all of this. But all of them have... I don't know.
Did you ask anybody that directly of like, do you guys feel like this panic is being pushed and your food is benefiting from it?
I didn't ask it that directly, but one guy I talked to, I did bring up that like the delay is because of increased sales surrounding this coronavirus stuff.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So okay. I think there is an awareness, at least from one of the guys that I talked to.
Yeah, you can't not be aware.
No, right? No. And in hindsight, I really wish I had asked all of them if their competitors don't have food.
That I was wondering. I thought you were. I thought you were for sure asking. No, oh, I fucked damn. Up. Damn.
Cool, because I wasn't trying to get like a gotcha.
No,
thing.
No, of course
I
not.
I was just trying to gauge, like, if I call these people, will they have food?
Yeah.
And all of them, yes.
Yeah, of course they do.
I should have asked if they, because I'm interested in if that's an angle that they all have.
Yeah, yeah.
As opposed to just, this is what my Patriot Supply is saying. I'm not sure, but whatever the case is, they're all. Not they all are. I don't know what the other companies are doing.
Right.
My Patriot Supply and Alex Jones are running a fucking disgraceful charade here, yeah. Pretending that no one else has any food. All that stuff is such bullshit.
I imagine that the food companies that have, like, I don't know, I mean, Souls or something along those lines are, like, fully aware that this is all because of the coronavirus panic, and they're not pushing it. They're not trying to get that panic out there.
Yeah.
But they're also not exactly like...
It's not wrong.
Everybody calm down. They're, you know...
It's not wrong to make money off of increased demand.
No, it's
but
wrong
it's wrong to
panic
artificially
people.
Yeah. Create that demand by the sort of actions that Alex is taking. So they get done with this interview, and Alex comes back, and it's time to get to this Trump press conference, because Trump is giving his speech about criminal justice. Now, mic down for this, because this clip takes a ride.
Okay.
Alex jumps in media res in the middle of Trump's speech, and he thinks that Trump is about to pardon Roger.
On live air.
Yes.
Oh, man.
And it does not go the way he wants.
Of course not.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, no music here as we start the fourth hour. We're preempting a lot of stuff. President Trump just took the microphone on a criminal justice reform speech. People are expecting him to make a statement on Roger Stone's 3.5-year sentence given down by the Obama dropping Judge Jackson. Here he is.
We are giving him absolute consideration, and I have a feeling he's going to get that full pardon.
That's
about feeling. I can't tell you.
That's
I have a feeling.
I know this is a live feed. Man, we missed that by 10 seconds. Maybe somebody else.
Great gentleman. That's the first thing they said to me when I walked in. And but everybody knows who you are. I know who you are.
Oh, 11 years guy. Of that's this. That's not Roger Stone. So we want to hear about tremendous. Hope the black guy gets a pardon too. But what about Roger Stone?
It's somebody completely different. Trump is talking about some other guy who's in the room who might get a pardon.
Oh no.
Oh, Alex, you felt like you had that victory so tasty.
No.
So tasty, but it's just some black guy.
Oh, man. And he even makes it way worse. Of course he does.
Oh, yeah.
Of course he does. He
Alex,
just can't deal
Justin,
with disappointment.
Asshole. So Alex thinks that this speech Trump is giving is going to be where he pardons Roger. But in reality, it's just Trump giving a stump speech at the commencement of a Hope for Prisoners graduation ceremony in Las Vegas. It's just part of his re-election publicity speech to her.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with Roger or even any of the pardons, like with Blago that he gave up. It's just press. So anyway, Trump rambles in the middle of the speech.
Surprise.
And he talks about, like, hey, you know, we're going to get some. Hey, you know, some people getting out of prison. And they're all good people. Well, maybe some of them aren't good people. He is specifically saying that, like, yeah, I might let some bad people out of prison.
Really?
It's weird.
He can't do that.
And we want to bring returning citizens, great people. Great people, in many cases, great people. And not in all cases. I'm not going to be too politically correct, fellas, right? Not in all cases.
That's not a laugh line.
But in many cases... We want to rebuild their lives. They want to rebuild their lives. They want to help us.
You know,
and
Trump
rebuild
is human.
Country.
He's not anti-human. That's,
and please,
that's why they're
please,
pissed. He's just not. He likes people.
Yeah, he likes letting bad people out of prison.
I don't understand how.
I mean, whatever. I mean, bad is kind of a relative term.
Yeah.
I don't know what the definition of it is, but.
This is such like a. Oh, this is how you can get away with so much shit. It's just like, do a new evil thing every day, and if possible, every 20 minutes. You can't possibly imagine any fucking president saying, I'm going to let some bad people out of jail.
Yeah.
I'm just going to do it.
I'm not going to be politically correct and say everybody's great.
How can you be politically correct? You're just, I'm just going to let some murderers out, and if they murder people, you know what? I'm not politically correct, guys. I shoot from the hip.
Right.
You can't possibly do that.
It's very weird. It's a weird speech.
God.
And so he notices, or I guess he knows, that Miriam and Sheldon Adelson are in the audience of this speech that he's giving.
We're going to let some bad people into this room.
And so he gives them a shout out. And this shout out is weird.
And the job you do, Miriam, what you've done, Sheldon, just overall is incredible. And really good. Two great people. Just
really.
Great people. And they like a place called Israel very much. Would you say that's correct? Maybe I have to use the word love, a place called Israel, right? In your case.
What the fuck? I understand. Look, it seems weird that he's thanking Miriam and Sheldon Adelson, mega donors, the GOP,
who are there.
It seems kind of incongruous, but it turns out that the Adelsons run a addiction recovery place in Las Vegas.
Sure, fine.
So there is a kind of a relevance to criminal justice reform.
Great.
It does make sense that they would be there, but Trump thanking them and then being like, and they love Israel, very weird. Seems unrelated.
It must be so similar to what it was like to live during like 85 to 88 with every time Reagan spoke out loud and everybody was just like,
but with the internet.
Yeah, exactly. If you heard Reagan speak in those last 3 years, you must have just been like, I'm going to pretend that didn't happen. Because that was nuts.
Or you're laughing at non-laugh lines.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I'm going to let bad
I'm
people
gonna let bad. Oh, my
yeah,
God.
Yeah.
Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, it's very upsetting. And so he starts talking about Roger, which is not really what this commencement is for. Seems strange to use it as a pulpit to, you know, ramble about your own business.
Oh, that sounds so out of character.
But what he does is he says that he's not, he doesn't even use the word pardon. He talks about the great power the president has, refuses to use the word pardon. And he says that he's not going to get involved. He's going to let the process work its way out.
Sure.
And then he starts rambling about the conspiracy theory about the juror.
But she had a horrible social media account. The things she said on the account were unbelievable. She didn't reveal that when she was chosen. And she's, I guess, from what I hear, a very strong woman, a very dominant person. So she can get people to do whatever she wants. And she got on, then she became the four woman on the jury. And I assume they asked her a question. Do you have any bias? Do you have any? She didn't say that. So
no, we paid for the voir dire documents. We have them. We have lawyers on it.
But does this undermine our fair system of justice? How can you
By the way, listeners, you finance that.
Like this. Did she delete her social account?
Nope.
And when Roger was determined by the same jury to be guilty, before the judge issued a sentence, and he was determined to be guilty, and she started going a little wild. She's very happy. And she started saying things that people said, that's strange. That's strange. And then they started looking at, how can you have a jury pool tainted so badly? It's not fair.
So, I mean, you can hear like slight nervous laughter from people in the audience. Like, cause if you're there for this like graduation from a rehabilitation program, like prison to release, like you're there because maybe one of your loved ones has been trying really hard to get their life back on track. And this is a big time for them. It's, you know, you get to reconnect with this person and bring them back into your day-to-day lives. And you've got the fucking president rambling about a conspiracy theory about a juror. How do you handle that?
This is him being a reality TV show star. This is him like teasing it out. Like this is literally him being like, I don't know, maybe on the next episode we'll part. Yeah. It's like, fuck you. God,
it's really disrespectful to the people who are there for this event.
Absolutely. Like he fucking cares.
No, I know. Yeah. It's probably maybe a minor issue, but it's not for them.
Yeah.
God. Anyway, he does literally say that I'm not going to pardon him, which means he's probably going to pardon him.
But
he doesn't say he's going to. He doesn't use the word pardon. Alex seems to be pretty happy by this turn of events and is pretending that it's definite evidence
great news,
that the pardon has happened.
That's Trump without a teleprompter. That's the real Donald Trump, the one we love.
The insane one?
You gotta know the deep state's gonna strike back after this. Man, they are having their ass handed to them. Roger Stone, give it 3.5 years. Trump's about to pardon him bigger than Dallas. I'm Alex Jones. This is the front lines of the American.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil.
He got cut off by the break there. He doesn't seem very happy.
Get some CBD.
He seems a bit dejected by, because I think he thought that that press conference was going to be the way he could end the show.
It's going to be a victory lap.
It's going to be a huge. Yeah. And also, like, everything is not going the way he wants it to on this episode. Like, he wanted Owen Schroyer to do a big publicity stunt. He got Schroyer bogged sucks. Down by complaining and arguing with the people.
Yep.
He's now trying to do this big hurrah with Roger at the end. It's not going. He tried to, like, I don't know, lackadaisically do that. I can't cover the coronavirus news. That didn't go anywhere. Yeah. This is a very disappointing show. It's all over the place, but very disappointing. So Alex has Matt Bracken taken over in the fourth hour, right? Mm. But he need like that.
That's not the way you.
That left a bad taste in his mouth. Yeah,
yeah. End on a laugh. That's you got to end on a laugh.
So he goes back to the batter's box. He's getting ready to take some swings, and he's like, "All right, well, go to calls. You know, I'll take a caller. That'll be great. They'll tell me I'm awesome." Unfortunately, he gets a sovereign citizen.
Oh, God.
With regards to Roger Stone, I do want to say if it did work out any differently, because I got a feeling he's going to be pardoned, but in the event this were to come up for other people, he honestly should get rid of his attorneys at law, because, I mean, those are titles of nobility, and, you know, he should stand in the law, in propria persona, as the attorney, in fact, and use his saving to
suitors. Well,
the
spirit's what matters. You can get into legalese all day.
That's legalese.
Trump being the real president.
That is not legalese. That is mumbo jumbo.
Well, if you directly bypass the system and start talking to the Elven Council, then hold on, we don't need to get bogged down in legalese, guys.
Hey, man, he gets close to that.
Yeah, and I mean, the U.S. corporation's bankrupt, man, and we aren't 14th Amendment, you know, citizen slaves, so we should just stand up, like, even with the DMV, like, don't get those license plates, man. Don't register your vehicle. You're not a birth
certificate. Sure. No, the globalists have all these legalese things, and I get what you're saying. A lot of it's true.
Really?
But at the end of the day, need to take the country back and restore American values. Then we can deal with everything else. I mean, does that make sense?
Here's what makes sense. Alex can't tell this guy that that's all bullshit.
You can't do it.
Because that risks alienating a large swath of his audience.
Yeah.
So he has to play this game where he thinks some of this is legitimate, but he can never really be like, yes, this is what you need to do. Send your Social Security card back to the government.
Yeah. Be specific on what it is you do think is true.
Right,
a lot of what you're saying is true. Now, a lot of what you're saying is true. Give me one thing,
He
Alex.
Can't. He's in that in-between state where pushing back on this risks alienating the hard sovereign citizen support that exists within his audience. And validating it makes it so, like, his show is stupid.
Yeah.
Stupider, yep. I should say. Yeah. So we have one last clip, and it's Alex. Like, I don't know why he didn't just hang up on this dude, but the sovereign citizen wants advice on what he should do.
Oh, no.
My advice would be go to a therapist.
Go home.
Go to a therapist. Talk to somebody, because you believe some things that are not based in reality.
Therapy maybe is get a some title help. Of nobility, Dan.
That is true. LCSW is part of the crown. Instead, Alex has some other advice.
Okay.
But like, what would like a day-to-day person like me, you know, in his 20s, still, you know, in quote-unquote school, getting, you know, taught all
quote
this
unquote.
Crap? Like,
what are we doing? Like,
I would go to city council and county commissioners every week and give a 3-minute speech about the world, and that'll dominate them and destroy them until others come and speak. I would start a YouTube show. I'd start an online thing. I would just read InfoWars stories on air.
Oh, great advice.
Read InfoWars stories on your own YouTube channel.
Create another media tendril for me. Yeah. Get on YouTube and read my shit where I'm not allowed to be. Also, go down to city council and make yourself a public embarrassment for 3 minutes at a time, and you'll totally destroy the city councils.
What should I do? Here's my advice. Work for me for free.
And embarrass yourself in public, so you're even more alienated from other people around
you.
You fall deeper into the
only listen to me and the other people who agree with you.
It's a great system.
Claim everybody else is a liar who's trying to kill
system.
You.
Yeah. Bad advice, Alex.
Bad advice.
So we come to the end of this February 20th, 2020 episode, and I think that Alex has dealt quite well with the fact that his best friend got sentenced to 3 years and plus in prison. And
it's doing great.
This show sucks.
Oh, man.
What a disappointment.
I have this dream in my head that I really hope Trump abandons Stone, because I think Stone might be the only rat fucker able to rat fuck Trump.
Right.
I think he's the only one who could really do it. And I want to see what happens. Because he's got so much shit.
Right.
He's got so much shit.
Most likely, yeah.
You can't not have so much shit. If you're Stone and Trump.
But I think that assumption that you're making is also what animates all of the desperate defense of Roger.
Oh, no, yeah.
People like Alex and Owen also assume that he knows so much.
Absolutely.
And that's why they have to bend over backwards to try and create these narratives. And it extends so far. Like, Tucker Carlson even plays the same game.
Yeah.
And some of that might also just be based on the fact that him and Roger are friends. It's hard to tell where the line of fear of what Roger knows and personal affinity where that is.
Right. I imagine those lines blur together just like in a personal sense of like, if you're friends with Roger Stone, the longer your friendship goes, the more part of your friendship is like, I wish I hadn't said that to Roger Stone. You know, like there's something there.
Can't shake him.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, we come to the end of this, and I just think that Alex has done a pretty disgraceful job
just
on all
awful.
Counts.
Just awful.
Just trash.
Just awful.
But we'll,
fire Schroyer, please.
Yeah, we'll be back. But until then, we have a website.
We do have a website. It's knowledgefight.com.
Yep. We're also on Twitter.
We are on Twitter. It's at @knowledge_fight and @GoToBedJordan.
Yep. We're also on Facebook.
We are on Facebook. And if we're on iTunes and if you want to download the show, please go to there, leave a review, donate to the show, do the whole thing. We would love it.
Special thank you to the guy who I cannot call the Health Ranger. But we'll be back. Until then, I'm Neo. I'm Leo. I'm DZX Clark. I'm the juiciest ice cube.
Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
I love you.